What's up, fools? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode of the show is brought to you by Beeline Coffee. Beeline is, God, it's good. Every time I try a different coffee, and people know I like coffee, so they send me other coffees and stuff, I just go, this is not as good as Beeline Coffee. And it's so good because me, my coffee nerdness, I've worked with them in Florida where they do their roasting, and we've created the Roasted Tire 3.0, which I think is the perfect coffee blend. It's not cheap, but it's single origin. It is a perfect roast. It's medium body. It's medium roast, medium flavor, but a lot of caffeine. It's good for the mornings. It's got such a good flavor. The Roasted Tire 3.0 can be identified from our previous roasts because it has the Lamborghini Countach on it. The 2.0 had the Porsche. 1.0 had the Mustang. And if you use code TST at the Beeline Coffee store, BeelineCoffee.com, any size order, big or small, whether it's 1 pound, 10 pounds, or an annual subscription, I'll give you 15% off your total order at Beeline Coffee. That's code TST at BeelineCoffee.com, and I'll give you 15% off your whole order. You should really try it. If you love coffee, I mean, I realize not everyone is as big of a coffee nerd as I am, but a cup of coffee is how I start every single morning, and it's just so nice to have a really good quality cup of coffee. And if it's just you, a pound lasts quite some time. You know, it's a little more expensive, but it does last a while. So BeelineCoffee.com, code TST, 15% off. Also, haven't promoted them in a while, but Dylan Optics sunglasses, the official eyewear of the Smoking Tire. A lot of people ask me about them. I'm always wearing my Dylans. Wherever I go, people think my glasses are fogged up or whatever. The matte finish is not just indicative of standing out in the crowd. It's not just a different look. That the glass in Dylan Optics is so good. It's like HD life. It's so clear and crystal. It's polarized. It's anti-reflective. And they have those matte finish lenses in all different colors. There's silver, black, green, gold, blue, and I think they've got red coming out this year. They've got the aviator style frames. They've got the plastic wraparound style frames. There's bigger frames, smaller frames. And if you go to thesmokingtire.com and click on the partners tab, I wish there was a better way to do it than that, but it's one extra click. Go to thesmokingtire.com, click on the partners tab. There's the Dylan Optics banner right there. If you use that link to order a pair of Dylan Optics, I will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt just for supporting the people who support the show. Again, go to thesmokingtire.com. Click on the partners tab, and there's the Dylan Optics banner. Use that to get to their website. It tracks back to us, and we know to send you a free t-shirt with every pair of Dylan Optics sunglasses ordered. Okay, on this episode, I have just returned from vacation, a two-week road trip around the desert, and I haven't caught up with Zach, who was out of town for Christmas, and we haven't talked about what we've been doing together and had just a little Smoking Tire campfire show in some time. So here's, without further ado, it's me and Zach talking shit on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
What's up, fuckers?
It's the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Hello.
And my coffee is about to kick in.
Right at 4 p.m.
No, my whole afternoon, like I had like a fat ass burrito at noon and then immediately did an hour of cardio and then immediately went to an hour of physical therapy, which for physical therapy is leg day. All I do in physical therapy is like manipulates my kneecaps because they're fucked.
Okay.
And then I do like 45 minutes of like squats. And by the time I was done, I felt like I was going to pass out. Mm-hmm. So this coffee was in order. And I'm driving that. Did you go outside yet, Zachary Clapman?
Not since you got here.
I'm driving a powder blue. Periwinkle blue.
Periwinkle blue, boy.
Hyundai Veloster N.
Didn't you drive that?
No, I drove the R-Spec.
Okay.
No, the R-Spec. The N is the really fast
right,
one.
Right. I thought the colors were similar. Okay.
No, and it's really... it's a really feminine color. Like, I almost want to say it's ghee, but it's not ghee. It's just very femme.
Right.
And I pulled up next at Starbucks to get this coffee. Sorry, Beeline, but I had to. I needed it. And these dudes were literally laughing at me.
Because it's fucking loud, this car. Like, it's loud like my Focus RS was loud.
So it draws the attention.
It draws the attention, right. And then it's kind of this ghee color.
It's a very soft, it's a baby's room color.
Yeah, like, it's the color of, it's a boy.
A reveal.
It's a gender reveal.
Did you see that story? This BLM sheriff dude did a gender reveal in Arizona, shooting, like, Tannerite. And then he lit up accidentally lit a grass fire.
Oh, like a proper fire, right?
Fire.
Yeah. I remember that.
So we should tone those down a little bit.
That was fucking dumb. You know what's dumb? Gender reveal parties.
Yep, totally.
What?
Who cares? How much attention do we need?
Bro, post a tweet. Done.
Yeah.
Fucking tweet it. Facebook status, whatever social media platform. Don't make me come over.
Inviting people to that is annoying. I think putting the video up is also annoying. It's just...
What's more annoying? A gender reveal video, or given that the date is December 28th, mm-hmm. I am... Let's talk about things I'm over. I'm really happy to not hear Christmas music for another 11 months. Mm-hmm. Although it bothered me slightly less this year than other years. I feel like I didn't do a lot of shopping. So, yes. My online shopping saves me from that. But fucking I am over the sports car with the Christmas tree on the roof. I am so over your fucking LaFerrari with the Christmas tree on the roof. I don't give a fuck, man.
Well, if it's not an interesting idea, if everyone does it.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a couple people had, like, good, like, someone did something with a Lancia 037. That one was good. Because he was fucking, like, it was like rendezvous with this fucking thing. And apparently, you know, at least in the video, it looked like he went and actually cut the tree down. Like, the fucking Instagram of the sports car with the fucking tree on the roof. Ugh,
it's
so over it.
It's just whenever something becomes a trend on Instagram, but there's no merit behind it. Like, mm-hmm. if all you do is kind of stunt and you put the tree on the exotic car, now you're the girl doing the yoga pose on top of the hill looking at the sunset. It's just like, yeah, oh, once someone did it cool.
Yeah.
But when it becomes too common, no one cares. And I don't know.
It's not like a tree is heavy. It's like, who gives a shit?
Well, it's like, oh, look, I daily this. I'm using it for an errand. It's like, well, do you actually drive it a lot and get it dirty? Or is this just to show off on Instagram? It's like, what is the motivation behind it?
You know what impressed me? Fucking put a refrigerator on the roof. Go to Sears and get yourself a fucking Sub-Z double doors. Put that shit on the roof.
You know, those roofs are probably strong enough. Pagani roof, like, you could drop it on its head?
The Ford GT broke the crush machine, the roof crush machine.
I bet you could put a fridge on one of those. Yeah. That would be amazing. That'd be impressive.
Was it Doug? Someone fucking got a TV or something on. I think Doug got a TV on his Ferrari.
Really?
I think. Wow. Yeah, I mean, it was a goof for a story. It wasn't like some shit you actually do.
Of course, but it's kind of cool. Like, you have this carbon roof. So if you got suction cups just to make it even and then put it on like a rack, that would be that'd be funny.
Oh, dude, I was talking. So Vinny Russo, our mm-hmm. friend Vinny Russo, is now my temporary roommate because he moved to California and he had a real job today. He's working for Nick over at VF Engineering. And so he's going to come do the show. I don't know, whenever our next recording is. But he has a hobby of like making furniture and cool shit out of car parts. Like, that's what he's kind of into. And he's going to help me make some stuff for the cigar lounge at the new place. So we're looking at doing these like airplane pistons as freestanding cigar ashtrays. Like,
go
next to your leather chairs, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But he had, we were discussing engine block coffee tables. Cause like, I'm gonna give the Lexus to Freddie, who's probably going to blow it up. Mm-hmm. And when he does, that's the deal. Like, I give the Lexus to Freddie when it hits a million. It's at $998,750 right now.
Wow.
So the dude who's got it, Robert in Indiana, is going to drive it to Atlanta and drop it with Lee Keen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to, because we can't make the exact handoff work. So Lee's going to shove it in his building for a couple weeks. I'll fly down. If you want to join me, by all means, come on. We'll fly to Atlanta, grab it, and do the last 500-600 miles to Florida to return it to its natural habitat.
Absolutely.
And cross the million, give it to Freddie, and then fucking just fly home.
Right. Okay. And then he'll break
more
it.
Importantly, cancel the corporate insurance. I'm fucking tired of that bullshit. And when Freddie eventually blows it up because he wants to do twin turbos, or I think he said a big single, actually, not twins.
Oh my god!
He wants to do the big single turbo. He'll fucking blow it up in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. The deal was he can have the car for free, but when he does blow it up, I get a coffee table out of the engine.
Cool. Bike. Are you gonna go like media blast it and do that yourself, or have someone do it, or whatever?
No, he's gonna do it.
Oh, he's gonna. Oh,
that's the deal. If he blows it up. Table. He has to make the coffee table.
Wow.
That's
right,
the
cool.
deal.
That's cool.
And when she was like, fine, whatever, free car. And so I was talking with Vinny about this is going somewhere. I was talking with Vinny about like
we're
different
already somewhere.
Coffee tables, like ways to do it. And he showed me some fucking crazy shit people are doing with cars and coffee tables. And one of the coolest ones I saw was a Volkswagen Squareback roof. So imagine you took a Sawzall at the belt line of a square back.
Wow. Okay.
And just cut the roof off.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
And so you had A pillar, B pillar, C pillar, mm-hmm. and that's the base. And then it had a ski rack on it that held the glass.
Held the glass. That's very
smart. It was fucking dope.
That's really smart. Yeah. Never even thought of that.
Yeah. Wow. And then someone else took a sport bike, a motorcycle, and cut it vertically down the middle and opened it like a V.
Mm-hmm.
So this one looked very difficult to make and was apparently very expensive. Like, so half the engine, like...
Right, exposed.
Yeah,
wow.
Like, remember the James Bond shit where they cut the Z8 in half, like, down the middle, like mm-hmm. that? And they made a V, like, here's your sport bike, and they...
Yeah.
And...
Open it like a book.
Yeah.
I mean, sports, that's really hard because you have to take every part off bike, and cut it in half separately. Like,
yeah,
you can't just run the Sawzall down the middle of it.
Table. I wonder if I could find a picture of it because it was so fucking cool. Maybe motorcycle.
There's someone low siding.
Motorcycle cut. I don't know. This was like in a guy's house, so I don't even know if there'd be a picture of it on the internet. It didn't seem like a dude who fucking flossed. When Vinny comes in, he'll bring the picture of it. It was crazy.
But how tall? So that was a coffee table?
That was a dining room table.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's
and that was
amazing.
Super, super cool.
That's
and then
cool.
he had end tables that were stop signs, but welded onto like vertical pistons mm-hmm. that went on to, you know, to a stand.
Yeah.
So like we were talking about furniture and stuff. How
that's
I
cool.
on this topic?
Lexus, how tall or long are airplane pistons? Like how many feet? With
oh, well, the
rod.
I don't know about the rod. I'm just talking about the head of the piston, which when you flip it over would make a nice
like cabin,
cereal
right?
bowl sized ashtray. Actually, speaking of it, Tanner...
Big like semi truck pistons are like beer steins. They're huge.
Right. No, Tanner just posted. I was thinking of it today because look here's a picture Tanner posted on his Instagram. He's got a little airplane.
Whoa!
And he was working on. So this is think about this, right?
It's like the size of his head.
Yeah, it's like the size of a cereal bowl. That would make a cool cigar ashtray, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you gotta cut the. Actually, you don't have to cut the middle. You can just put grooves in it for cigars.
Yeah. You just cut little fucking notches. And then weld the flat end to some kind of a stand.
Yeah, totally.
And it doesn't need to be like good pistons, but...
No, it doesn't. No,
yeah.
Of course not. You don't want to use good pistons.
No,
but, these are titanium.
You go to like the fucking Pomona swap meet and get that shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. And then you just sand it or blast it and coat it or whatever. That's cool.
But if someone, if people out there have idea... I do. What the fuck? I follow Tanner.
Not following Tanner Faust?
Oh, I am. Why does it think I'm not? That's bizarre.
Hmm.
I was. That's how I saw the fucking post today. If anyone out there has a really good idea for, like, I don't want it to be super, super cheesy. You know what I mean? I don't want the fucking place to look like a fucking sock hop. Mm-hmm. You know what I
right.
mean? You know, but think like.
Stop signs a little cheesy.
I'm not doing checkerboard floors. I'm not doing neon signs. But
I
like
the wine storage. Have you seen that? Like someone takes an engine block, you mount it vertically.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And if it's big enough, it fits wine. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, those are cool. And then, you know, we've seen that dude Vulcan Innova who does the engine block watch winders that are extremely crazy. Have you seen those?
You know what would be cool is steering wheels with glass over them for an end table.
Oh, yeah.
Like if it was an iconic wheel or especially an old one, like the old, any car from the 30s to the 50s.
Check this dude out. This dude's here in California, and this is called Vulcan Innova. And this is a BMW inline six watch winder. And so he takes the hardware from a Wolf watch winder and installs it into an engine block. These things are fuck all expensive.
I believe that.
I think they're like $20,000. I mean, they're really, really expensive.
How much is the Wolf hardware? Like, how much is a wolf watch?
Like,
winder
a wolf
anyway?
Watch winder is a couple hundred dollars.
Okay. Oh.
So, but like, right. But like, check that shit out with the video. Like,
oh, it's very smooth.
That's dope. And very the LEDs smooth. Lights are all built in, and it's all the, you know, they're electronically controlled.
Yeah. Okay.
That's rad as
that's
hell.
That's very cool. It still has the cam in it too, I think.
I don't know. If you're an extreme baller, though,
no, it doesn't.
You know, that shit is dank.
That's pretty cool. And it's pretty compact because it's inline six.
Yeah, well, that guy's working on a Porsche. I think he was working on a flat six. He was working on a couple other engines, but he was starting with the inlines because they were nice and easy to...
Well, it's really like when you turn it vertically, it's,
here's
you know...
Here's a shot of all
eight
his,
inches by 8 inches. That's wiring. A lot of wires.
Whoa. To hang the thing. Yeah.
Got that valve cover? Wow, that's a ton of stuff.
Yeah, crazy, right?
That's
this
really
guy's
rad.
Right here in California. Where? I think they're just in L. I think he's in L.A. I don't remember the dude's name, and I'm sorry, but he is in Los Angeles. So check
Spock.
That guy out if you got a lot of fucking money.
Will you turn my headphones down like two clicks?
I can't. I can only turn both our headphones down together.
Okay.
That's
right.
The difference between this studio and the other one
gotcha.
Is I don't have
that's
an independent
okay.
headphone amp. Is that better? I just turned it down a little bit. Okay, cool. Anyway, fuck, you've been driving.
Tons of stuff.
You drove a bunch of shit today, didn't you?
Today I drove...
Oh, Marco just commented he doesn't use wolf guts. He manufactures his own. All right, I'm sorry. Thank you, Marco. I apologize. Sean Chang, that is his name. Thank you, Marco. Marco, how about you fucking get back to work and rebuild my engine? Marco's
only 415.
Marco Gerassi of TLG Auto sent me these photographs because he is the mid-rebuild of my 911 engine.
So I had a question because initially you were going to do only top end.
Yeah.
And then I'm glad you did full bottom end because
well, so here's how
there.
This went. So we were going to do the top end, right? Only the top end of my engine. And and the price he quoted me was like a worst case scenario price, figuring we'd have to replace cylinder liners and pistons.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up we did not have to replace either of those things.
Okay.
So Marco calls me and he's like, I got a question for you. Have you mentally spent that money? Is that money gone from your head already? And I was like, kinda. And he goes, because if I save you a bunch of money by not having to replace that shit and we reappropriate those exact same funds, I could do your entire bottom end. And I could give you back an engine that is a true 0 mile engine. And it will be good for 200,000 miles of very hard abuse. And I was like, was there any time added to this? And he goes, nope. And I go, just fucking do it. So if he would spend a little less time listening to this podcast, a little more time working, I'm just kidding.
Well, that makes perfect sense because, I mean, a lot of the comments and my own reasoning was like, you're already looking at pistons. Like, you're already in there. And if you had to do that bottom end rebuild anyway, 60,000 miles later, like, now you don't have to do anything
right.
theoretically for, like, 200, right?
Right. Now, you know, on the one hand, the odds of...
I know the odds... You're not going to drive it that far.
Yeah, and as it turns out, he took the bottom end apart, and it was, like, fucking mint. So it would have done another 50 to 100,000 miles. It would have. But now it will do even more.
Well, there's peace of mind, and also, if you ever sold the car... You can say the whole thing was rebuilt and not like, oh, I kind of patched it. I did the top and not the bottom. And someone's like, well, fuck, eventually I have to do the bottom. And, you know, if they drive it a lot, so like, that's all done. That's good.
And I have to reinforce this again because people don't really listen when I talk about this. The problem of my engine smoking, which the smoke is what I noticed, it didn't happen when Batim, like, it literally was the worst possible timing. Like, but Tim and at BBI and his crew, like, they did the outside of the engine. They did the fittings and the hoses.
The reseal, they call it,
right?
A
reseal, yeah. They didn't go inside the engine. At the time, it wasn't smoking. At the time, the plugs weren't fouling. He sent it to Lee. Lee put 400 or 500 miles on the car. It wasn't doing that. They even had the car at Goldcrest Motorsports, who checked it over. They even commented of how nice a job Batim did. It wasn't doing that. I got it home the first day. The second day, it wasn't doing it. On the third day, it started smoking. So, like, it's shit timing, but, like, nobody missed anything. Like, it's not like there was, like, some oversight in the experts, like, missed shit. Like,
it's like the valve may have been hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
But that's nobody's fault. It just happened when you got it. It just happened at a very inconvenient time. That's always the hard thing about letting someone
even
drive
Marco just chimed in. Marco's the only person who gets to comment for free on this program. He said, Marco cut, neither BBI nor Lee missed anything. It's simply bad luck, which is something I agree with.
That's like, I mean, you know, when you drive someone's car at Gingerman or something, it's always worrying if, wow, what if when I drive a car at the track hard, it breaks, you know, or loaning someone your car to drive at the track. And a lot of people go, well, I don't really want to do that because if it breaks when you're driving it, it might not be your fault, but you might think it is, or I might think it is. Like, yeah, it can get
messy.
Well,
I drove a guy's Miata on a one take, and I drove it for half a mile, and the fucking diff exploded. Well, the diff didn't explode because I did a fucking 6,000 RPM clutch drop.
Right.
I was just driving, and I go, that's a funny noise. Bang! And it fucking exploded.
Oh, my God.
Like, not my fault. Like, right. I felt bad. You know what I mean? It's just shitty timing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, it's a fucking car. Like, it had 94,000 fucking miles on the engine, and this is a service that these engines need at 100,000, no matter what. So, like,
That's what led. I think our last show I was on. We all realized that if you're going to buy a car with near 100,000 miles, buy it just over when all that stuff is done.
Yeah. The moral of the story is: don't buy a 90,000 mile 911. Buy a 110,000 mile 911.
And I would say don't buy an 86,000 mile M3. Buy a 110 one that's had all the things done that break at 100.
Like my next Porsche, eventually. I shouldn't even be talking about this now, but eventually, GT3. My next Porsche
GT3.
Will either be a GT3 or it will be an air cool, like a 95 to 97 Carrera with 110,000 miles on it that just had this service done.
It'll be a GT3.
It'll probably be a GT3.
This will be modern, fast. I saw two RS.
My car has air conditioning today.
Yeah, I know. But you have, I feel like, I mean, you can speak to this better, but maybe you have the old-ish Porsche experience. So would you
like
go
the
one generation?
No,
up
I like the old Porsche experience. The old Porsche experience is good for me. Despite these bullshit headaches, the satisfaction of driving that car is lovely.
And is it an old car thing?
I don't know. I think it's got those cars like have a really nice charm to them. I like the size. They're fucking small. They're small, but they're spacious. Like I love that.
Yeah, they are. That's very true.
I really like how
E30s.
Yeah, they're small, but the greenhouse is really nice, and you can see really well out of them, and my shoulders have good room. And
do you think
charm.
Because modern cars, I mean, throughout the generations, cars were always trying to be the fastest thing on the road. That's how they win marketing and sales. But now that new cars are so fast, we can go back and look at a 20-year-old Porsche or a 30-year-old Porsche and go, well, it's not as fast as a Camry in a straight line.
Right.
So now I can look at it for other attributes and go, you know, this is charming. It's enjoyable. Yeah. It's not a race car to me anymore. Like our barometer changes a bit.
Yeah. Being older, I stopped caring. Like I don't, if you, this car has 500 horsepower and this one has 300. Like I don't give a fuck. Like, does it, when I go like this, does it feel quick?
Right.
That's enough.
Dude, I am with the one take thing. I am the prophet of 400 horsepower is enough.
Yeah.
Like you can use it everywhere. Mm-hmm. You can slide. It's quick in a straight line. Yeah. Anything over that, you can't use it.
In the canyons, in the canyons, you're never using full throttle even in a 500 horsepower car. Almost mm-hmm. never. I mean, very, very rare.
Totally.
Only on Upper Big Tahunga.
And today it was so cold that like wheel spin would happen in third. Like I drove a 600 horsepower Supra. And
but that was nice.
Oh, that engine's amazing.
It's a good engine.
In 2 weeks, I'd never driven a 2JZ car, and I drove a 94 Mustang GT that had a bar legal swap 2J in it.
Oh, really?
And this guy knew restraint. It was 350 horsepower.
It'll probably last a really long time.
It felt like it'll last forever.
Yeah.
He said it wasn't that crazy. It was a lot of research, and then it fit. Everything fit. There's enough room. It's still OBD1. So
did
that
you use
helps.
A gearbox too, or do you
yep,
just Mustang gearbox?
No,
or
V16, the Getrag 6-speed.
The Getrag 6-speed.
He got the Supra
That's
gearbox.
An expensive gearbox.
Yeah.
That gearbox probably cost more than a 94 Mustang.
Definitely did, because this Mustang looked rough. I mean, he's had it for 12 years.
Did you have it on your Instagram somewhere?
Yeah, I think I did. Or I might have put it in stories.
No, was it here?
No, it was a different day. It was go up. I put it in. Oh, it's here.
Here?
Yeah, it was a 190E day. How close did I get?
I think you had a...
I think I put it in Instagram. Oh, here it is. So this guy. Yeah. So it's like some of the panels are different colors. The interior looks is OEM and has like the hand juice on the steering wheel. The seats
hand
like
juice is a great word. That's fucking nasty.
The seats don't recline right. Hand like juice. it needs seats and a new wheel. But it was bar legal. He built it right, and the suspension felt good. The brakes felt good. Like it ran great.
So what did he have to do to make it bar legal? A header completely stock 2JZ, right?
Yeah, it has to have the original manifold. It has to have all the original emissions equipment. And
the same year or newer.
So this engine was a 94 2JZ.
Okay.
So it was the same year. And I think because it was an OBD1 motor, it wasn't like going OBD2 engine swap.
That's a whole different
story.
Super
hard.
Yeah.
But this was just, do you have the right number of cats, the manifold, and everything else? And I guess the length of this is correct and the same as the Super, or close enough, where you have all the manifolds and the mufflers and everything just like fits.
So the whole exhaust is from a Supra?
Back to the cat. And then after that, he actually split it and wrapped it and did like the Mustang slash cut exhaust, which is cool. It looks
like the dual exhaust.
Yeah, the dual exhaust. It's wrapped. It's really low.
I like that. Boy, is this fucking hood fitment janky as hell, though, huh? What is this? What is this rubberness around the headlights in there?
I do not know.
Just medium jank?
Yeah, I mean, he bought this car. I mean, he bought it 12 years ago and drove it through like college and everything. He did the swap in his backyard. It looks like shit, to be honest. Like it's got a wrap on it. It was red before. It's gray.
That's a wrap. That's a shiny wrap.
It's a gray wrap.
It's probably better than whatever.
But
the
it runs fantastic. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it does. Judging by the condition of the seats inside, the previous owner did not.
Those
take
seats
care
are
of it.
Terrible. Aren't they the worst seats ever?
Yeah, they have inflatable bolsters, which I was very surprised by.
Yeah,
but they're still not good.
They
sit really high, and the steering feel. He did the Cobra R rack also without your control arms. 305s and everything.
There's no point.
There's no, like, you can't feel anything.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's,
but I drove that Supra today. Also, very little steering feel, surprisingly.
Anything from the mid 90s is going to have pretty shit steering without a lot of modifications. Like,
unless it's like a Miata or something.
Unless it's a Miata or a Porsche or even a Corvette, actually. Corvette's shockingly good steering, but like, yeah, Supras, all the Toyotas, even the MR2 stock has terrible steering.
Is it an
the fucking Lotus Esprit has garbage steering in the 90s. When they went to power, it was terrible.
Did they overboost everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really, really, they were like, oh, with power steering, we can make it light. And so it's just like this fucking mess of light steering.
It's very strange. It's like it's like playing, Iron Man off-road in the arcade, and you just spin the wheel and you can't.
Well, now they have a different problem because I went and drove the Urus in Palm Springs. And, as fast as that thing is, and it's fucking fast. I mean, obviously I got to scroll
Finds
back.
The pictures.
Yeah. Should we go to the picture where it looks like an Aztec?
It sure does.
I drove it at the track.
Thermal, right?
At thermal. And it's obviously, it's seriously fast. It's 650 horsepower. It's like 700 torque. It's a monster motor.
Does it feel faster around a track than like a Hellcat or a Porsche, like Macan Turbo?
Well,
or
so here's where it's 4,800 pounds. It has 17.5-inch 10-piston front brakes, ceramic, which I melted in 4 laps. They came back.
What?
They came back. I didn't like set them on fire. Like it wasn't like that.
Right.
But like after 4 laps, like wait to see the video, like the pedal's on the floorboard. And I'm like, whoa. Like,
might be a fluid problem.
Yeah, I mean, they're running stock fluid for sure.
Yeah, they should just, I don't know why they don't put .4 in some of these cars. And we've talked to engineers before. Like
sometimes they do. Not Lamborghini, but like sometimes if they have track, if a press launch involves track work, they'll put the proper fluid in it. But like what I was getting at was the steering in this car is exactly like a mid-level Xbox simulator, like a Fanatic wheel.
Okay.
It doesn't feel at all like the steering wheel is
connected.
No, yeah, like it feels like it's drive by wire.
But it's heavy. Is it heavy like
it has
like
adjustable weight.
Okay.
It's a variable weight, but like it's not it like if you understeer, like you don't feel the chatter in the wheel
gotcha.
At all. The steering is like it's direct, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you point it and the car fucking goes. But it's completely separated from the wheels.
It's really unfortunate for Lamborghini. I mean, like Porsche, they do a good job. Some of the M cars do a good job, yeah. But even like the M340 is like what you're saying.
No, like all cars are kind of going this way, yeah. Where it's like it's a detached sort of steering feel, and I think the heavier the car gets, the more likely the manufacturer is to do that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah,
because the alternative is having a crazy over boosted sort of thing,
right.
And they're running 280 in the Urus, they're running a 285 front and a 325 rear, so you need a very strong power steering system to turn that, you know what I mean? But you don't want to have an over boosted hydraulic system, and you don't want to have a is this coming out? Fuck me.
You don't want much effort for somebody.
Yeah, you don't want right. Yeah, so you know, it kind of is what it is, but that the steering was like, and look, I don't think anyone who buys one of these fucking things is going to give two mm-hmm. fucks about the steering feel. It's not why you're buying a Urus.
Totally.
But like, it was disappointing. I mean, it was definitely disappointing. And most Lamborghinis, modern ones, have too light steering. Huracans and Aventadors, their steering is too light.
Is it lighter than the Ferrari 488? Because I know the Ferrari steering has kind of been
the Ferrari's
light for a while.
Very light, but it's
communicative, but light.
But it's light. It's much more talkative. This thing was full on video game steering.
Wow. Okay.
Fully, and there are like, you know, the video. I think the Urus is ugly, and I say that in the video. Like, I think it's. I forgive Lamborghini for a lot of things. Lamborghini is charmingly imperfect in every way. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that is totally unforgivable for Lamborghini to do is try to sell me something ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Always been
you could sell me something gorgeous. That catches on fire. You know what I mean? You could sell me something that I don't fucking fit in for nothing. The pedals could be way over here on the passenger seat. The gearbox is jerky. I forgive them for a lot of this kind of stuff. Because they're super, super pretty and they sound crazy good. This sounds like a loud Audi.
Okay. Like, I mean, in a good way or kind of a...
Well, it's the 4-liter V8.
Yeah.
You know, it's boosted up. It's got a good bark to it. It's not like it doesn't sound bad.
Like AMG or quieter than AMG?
Yeah, it resembles a like the E63 wagon. Like it resembles an AMG car. Yeah,
is that the problem though? That it doesn't sound like a Lamborghini?
It doesn't have the screaming.
Right.
It doesn't have that. They have done a very good job programming the ZF gearbox. They in Corsa mode, it has the kind of kick you want out of a Lamborghini, and the tuning of the gearbox is good.
That gearbox that's the best automatic on the planet.
I could make an argument for Lexus's.
I haven't driven.
I think Lexus's 8-speed is more fun to drive than some of the versions of the ZF. Some of the ZF, it really depends, A, who builds it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the European cars, a lot of them, the gearbox is built by ZF, whereas the Chrysler's Torque Flight, quote, mm-hmm. Torque Flight, is a ZF design built under license by Chrysler.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be a huge
Which is a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, the Chrysler one feels like it's got more slop in it than the Range Rover or the...
Like the BMW ZF is...
It's pretty good.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah, and this one is very good, too. It's just, overall... It's a very digital driving experience.
Yeah,
you know, well, you'll see in the video, like, it's fucking fast. Like, I'm mobbing it on the track pretty good. It fast, handles good, the brakes are good to a point. It sounds cool, although not particularly Lamborghini like. It is very comfortable.
Let's compare this to something like Range Rover HSV. You know.
Like, oh, the SVR, you mean?
SVR. You know, it's high dollar, super sport utility vehicle. This is probably more expensive, but I feel like the people that are shopping this are looking for that. They're looking for a status symbol that has sporting credibility. This
Correct.
Has more sporting credibility than a Range Rover, of course.
Correct.
But, you know.
I mean, look, it's... They're calling it a super sports SUV. Their marketing says... It feels more like a supercar than it does an SUV. Like, that's fucking horseshit. You know what I mean? If you want the most agile SUV, quote, on the market, get a Macan Turbo. Macan Turbo is a luxury rally car.
Mm-hmm.
I think a Macan Turbo would probably give this a run on a racetrack.
Wow.
Even with 200 less horsepower.
But that
they said
the status.
They said. I'm shamed. I can't remember the gentleman's name. This guy is the coolest guy ever who works at Lamborghini. Maurizio R.
Okay.
Whatever, Maurizio, yeah. the cool guy. He said he's faster around Lamborghini's track in Italy in this than he was in an 04 Gallardo.
Oh, I believe that.
So that's pretty good.
It is.
Also, the asterisk, of course, is that the 04 was the shitty Gallardo.
Yep, I know why he said that one.
He specified 04 Gallardo. Mm-hmm. He didn't say 2012 Gallardo.
Right. He went way back.
Yeah, the 04 was the one that was so bad they changed everything for 05. Literally had a different engine, had different gearbox.
Is that E-gear? Did that have the E-gear?
It had it had completely different gear ratios.
Oh, geez.
It had different engine and different gear ratios from 04 to 05. They changed a lot. You don't want to know.
So that's why I said, yeah.
That's why I said that. But still, okay. And
that's not surprising.
I'll give them some points. These seats were lovely. There's a lot of room in both the front and the back. I fit in the back really comfortably, actually.
Okay, that's good.
Like, props. Like, it's not super tall for as far as SUVs go, and I fit in the back all right.
All right, that's good.
And this leather was like that, is like that awesome King Ranch leather.
Oh, yeah.
That really nice tanned. I'm sure they'd love to hear me talk about the leather like a Ford, but it's that beautiful tanned, nice leather. And, you know, it's got some trick stuff.
I like the shape of the stitching. That's a cool kind of creative new take on seats.
Yeah. It has a lot. But the problem is, of course, it's crazy expensive, right?
How much
it starts at 200 grand. And they said they expect most of them will go out the door at 230 to 240.
Mm-hmm.
They said the most expensive one you could possibly get was like 255.
Somehow cheaper than I was expecting.
I think it's cheaper than a Bentayga.
It definitely is. The Bentayga we had for drive a couple years ago, I think it was 300.
Yeah, and guess what? No one's buying Bentaygas. Bentaygas are dead in the water.
Because now, do you think that's because they're unattractive? Or do you think the market doesn't exist?
I think it's because they aren't distinctive enough. I think they look too much like a Q7, honestly. I think
unless you see the front of one, like from the back and three quarter, if you don't know it, you're just like, oh, it's a large SUV.
Yeah.
What is that? And then you get to the front and go, oh.
Like if I was playing in that game, for me, it's Cullinan. Cullinan is the game over because it looks like a Phantom wagon lifted. It doesn't. It's
That's
got
true.
The right proportions, got the long nose. It's got the Rolls Cullinan looks like a super luxury thing, whereas the Bentayga shares hard points.
Pulling up, because I'm curious if the back of a Cullinan looks like a Range Rover, because they have kind of that similar, like smooth angular. I know that's kind of an oxymoron. No, the lights are distinctive enough. Okay.
Here's the Cullinan. I mean, I think this looks more like a Rolls Royce than the Bentayga does a Bentley.
I just think the Bentayga is unattractive at
almost
every angle.
I think it's unattractive as well. I also think the Urus is unattractive.
I agree. So that's the question is, you know, how the people that are shopping for this, if you like the way it looks, that's fine. Now, but we know there are a lot of people out there that want to just have status. They'll buy anything if it makes them look richer or cooler
Correct.
Than somebody else. So the question is, if they walk past the Bentley and are like, I have the money, but I don't like the way this looks, will they jump on this? Because it's like, yep, this is clearly, without a doubt, a Lamborghini SUV.
Oh, it's, yeah.
So are they going to lease it for 2 years and then, you know.
Although, did you see pictures of the new Blazer?
No.
The new Blazer, there are images just released. And the new Blazer looks like a budget Urus.
Kind of does. Looks like a Camaro front.
Doesn't that look Urus-y?
It looks better, I think.
Looks a little better?
I think it pull the up, go back to Urus. Got that from that angle.
Do I have a front? Here's a front. Well, I mean, I need a
You
front.
Know what? It's the kind of cam back, the small rear window helps. That's not bad. That's better. Yeah, I think that's not bad. The Blazer looks pretty good.
The Blazer looks okay, but like Blazer or Urus, like it shares a lot of these design cues, doesn't it?
Well, they have the tapering rear window,
yeah.
Which is kind of like a larger Evoque. You know what I saw today? A brand new Highlander, and looking quickly, the front of it slopes very much like the Velar.
Oh, yeah.
It was weird for a second.
So anyway, the Urus,
we'll see.
It drives nice for what it is. It's got, you know.
Well, engineering is amazing these days. I mean, the fact that, like, they know how to do it.
That's the thing. Making something fast isn't actually hard.
No.
I mean, the math is there to make something fast. But, like, the question, and they've clearly applied Lamborghini styling to a crossover here.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, should they have? I mean, I'm sure they look. They're anticipating with this car to double their production volume.
Wow!
They built a whole new factory,
jeez,
and they're saying that this will be 50% of their sales next year.
I mean, that's why they're doing it. You know, Porsche paved the way with Cayenne, and then they're all going to try to chase it because that's where the market's going. It's just
as a Countach
owner, it's hard to do.
Works for me. Only me. It only means my quote real Lamborghini.
That's
is
true.
Going to be that much more desirable, you know, once they build, because they built 3,500 Aventadors and Huracans in the past year. 3,500 in 1 year. They built 2,000 Countaches over 16 years.
That is the longest product run I've ever heard of.
The C4 Corvette went from 1983 to 1996.
13.
That's 13 years. The first gen Beetle, they did 50.
That's
but
different.
Yeah, the Countach went from 74 to 90.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much better did they get in 1990 than 74?
It's just almost the same fucking car.
Seriously?
Well, it's close. It's very close. The engine went from 4 liters V12 to 5 liters V12 in 1981 or 82. It went from the LP400 to the LP5000S. And then in 1986, they went to the QV, the four-valve engine, which is what I have.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed with that. So the four-valve engine was from 86 to 90. That's the 450-horsepower engine that I have. And then in 89 and 90, Horatio Pagani did the ugly redesign and made it worse. So my 87 is the, quote, best.
Right.
That it ever got, where it had the big motor, the wing, and the flares, but before they tacked on all the garbage.
It still had the good looks, but it drove better and it was faster, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of people like the early, you know, the narrow body cars, and they're obviously worth more money, mainly because they're rarer. You know, they only made like 115 Periscopos. They're like, they just don't exist, whereas they made like 115 Periscopos, and then 500 5000S's, and then like 610 QVs, and then I think 675 anniversary cars, and that's it.
Okay. So you're a pretty small company, which is good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, dude, my car's rare as shit.
And it's timeless. I mean, that's like the F-Pace did a good job. They took Jaguar looks and they just made it into an SUV, and it's like
F-Pace is a good example to take that design language and not completely fuck it up.
Yeah. I think with something this angular, it's got to be challenging if all you've done is sports cars, supercars, low slung, da da da.
They could have made it look completely different. Like, you don't need to apply a corporate schnoz to fucking everything you make. That's a mistake that if you go back to the 80s, you know, a company that made a range of vehicles, they didn't all use the same grill.
True.
Here's a good example. Lexus 570. I just had the Lexus 570 for 2 weeks. The Lexus Land Cruiser, if you will. For all intents and purposes, I think this car, the truck, shares more with its Toyota counterpart than almost any other vehicle Lexus makes right now. More than the ES. And it's a fucking spectacular vehicle. But does it need this schnoz?
No.
The hourglass shaped grill most certainly does not.
I bet there are plenty of like market experts that would go, well, people want, you know, it's the race car needs to look like, well, that's the good thing about GT racing. The race car looks like the street car. It helps sell the street car.
Yeah.
So if people see this and like it, they go, it's a Lexus, and then they get drawn to buy an IS250 or something because maybe. You know, you're striving for more kind of thing.
I guess, but I don't think that this truck needs to have this grill because the sedans also have this grill.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It'd be cool if just make
that
it good
grill
looking.
Looks cool on the LC500. It looks stupid on this truck.
Yes, it does. It definitely does.
Although I will say that I absolutely love this truck so much.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It was so nice. You know, we did like 1600, 1700 road miles in it, and then I went off-roading. And I mean, the fact that this thing is like, it's super refined on the road. It's really quiet and isolated. You know, it's not a Range Rover in terms of it's not that over-the-top poshness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like a marvel of gimmick technology. You know, it's got normal gauges and it's got normal MMI. It doesn't have massaging seats. You know what I mean? But like, it's for $88,000, which I don't even know if you can get into a full size Rover for less than that money. It's got all the crazy differentials and stuff, like ridiculous capability. The trail we did, ridiculous capability. I mean, ridiculous. It was so easy to climb mountains in this thing. And then, you know, a 5-hour road trip, Hannah drove it, like loved it. She was like, I just love how solid and quiet it feels and like easy for her to drive, great visibility. The cameras, the surround cameras were really nice. Stereo was good. Like, it wasn't like fancy schmancy. It was like, here's a truck, but everything you touch feels expensive. It's just like apply really nice materials to a utility vehicle.
You're in a luxury sedan, and then there's like a Tempur-Pedic mattress, and then there's a truck stuff. Well, meaning not like it's soft, like you're removed from how hardcore and capable it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Like you're not like thinking about like, oh, I'm in a super... It's just comfy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just like...
When you're in a Wrangler,
it's just well thought out.
You're well aware of it. So unless you're not...
Yeah. This is like... when you sit in it, it feels like a Lexus sedan should feel. Mm-hmm. Quiet, isolated, refined, you know, well put together, no rattles, none of that kind of shit. Like, other than the stupid mouse, which I hate, everything else just sort of works. And then you go... doot, 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 and hit three buttons, and then you climb up the gnarliest hill on 21-inch wheels like it's nothing. I mean, it was awesome.
I never knew how capable the Land Cruiser was when I was a kid, and you know, see them around town, and they were
you see moms driving them to the fucking soccer
and meanwhile,
practice.
It's like you could take it on Dakar if you wanted to slowly, or, you know, it's got serious differentials and articulation and did it, and great Toyota build quality is ridiculous.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, shout out to the clamshell tailgate.
Ooh,
the
comfy.
Clamshell tailgate is great, A, because you could film out of it, and here's Hannah at Bryce Canyon, and also because even if the trunk is completely full of luggage, you can drop that tailgate and you still have a seat.
Yeah. It's nice.
You don't have to sit on the dirty bumper.
More of them should do that.
Yeah, you always have a tray there.
Do you have a shot from the back with the thing closed? I'm just curious like how visible the clam is, the seam of the clam.
Well, if you look at...
The lip of the clam, if you will.
I mean, you can... Oh, you can't really see it there. I don't think I have one in my...
No.
I'm sorry. Okay. I don't. Nope. Not in my Instagram. Sorry. I'll put up. There's one later. Anyway, fuck else is going on? Land Cruiser road trip. Oh, yeah. By the way, I strongly recommend if you live in America and you have not done the Southwest National Parks hiking road trip, I really strongly recommend it. Like, I've done it a bunch, but Hannah had never done it. And she was just like, I can't believe it's so beautiful. Like, everywhere we go, it's so beautiful. Like, especially in winter, because it's not crazy hot, and a lot of the tourists aren't there. But the winter light is, like, so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You get the good light, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And so just, like, you know, Lower Antelope Canyon, this is, like, the light coming into Lower Antelope Canyon was just so amazing.
Well, there's more angle to the light because it's
all the time
south. All
yeah,
the time,
it's
right?
Afternoon. This is first thing in the morning in Bryce Canyon. Jeez. Which we did a spectacular hike in the snow. It looks like these rocks are just translucent and glowing.
Yeah, it does.
So we did Zion. This is Angel's Landing in Zion. We did Zion, Bryce, Lower Antelope, Grand Canyon, Lake Mead. We stopped at the Hoover Dam.
I rode a wave runner to the Hoover Dam once.
Did I not make it all the way over? I'm sorry.
And someone hit me.
I clicked, but I didn't fucking click properly. I'll just go through them again. The desert is just, it's so beautiful. And in the winter, like, it wasn't, look, it was a little cold in parts of it, but.
That's what clothes are for.
Yeah. And the Amangiri Resort, which I went to on the Range Rover launch in 2013, is the most luxurious place I've ever been in my life.
Jesus,
hands
Christ.
Down. It was crazy.
And you went to Monaco.
It was, oh, Monaco's like a shithole compared to this. Monaco is great if you're on your yacht. If you're actually in Monaco, it's pretty average. Amangiri is the ballerest fucking, like, there were 12 guests at this entire resort when we were there. There's just nobody there. Yeah. This is the pool.
Yeah, the
rocks
amazing.
Just come into this pool. They heat the pool to 90 degrees. Oh. It was so fucking great.
It's cool. The pool is U-shaped and it goes around
it
a rock
formation.
It goes
around a rock formation. And also, by the way, can I just say, I'd never done old school downtown Vegas before. You ever fuck with old school downtown Vegas?
I ziplined above it.
Oh, you did the Fremont?
I did that.
Was
which
that
is,
fun?
It's way more fun than you think when you hear ziplining in Vegas.
No,
it's pretty damn cool.
It sounded stupid, and then I saw some people do it, and I was like, actually, that looks
you see how far
cool.
it is?
Yeah.
It's like half a mile.
Yeah. How much did that cost?
I think it's like $40. It's not expensive. It's way
my
more
guess
fun
was
than you
$49.99.
Think. I don't remember what it was. It was a gift, but it's really not bad, and it's pretty cool.
Dude, Hannah and I were like, this time we're going to go to the old, and I don't think I'm ever going to go back to the normal strip. I think, dude, between the convenience of the downtown Vegas, like to get from the valet to the check-in to the rooms, like much more like a normal hotel and less like
not like a stadium.
Dude, we stayed at the Venetian the first way out, which is a lovely hotel, but it was like two elevators and a 20-minute walk to get to your room.
Mm-hmm.
How fucking annoying is that?
Yeah.
And then you go to get your car from the valet and they're like, it'll be up in 12 minutes. And you're like, what? Dude, at the Nugget? Bro, at the Nugget, it was like 50 steps to my room, one elevator, and then the car came around in 5 minutes. We went to this Chef Carl Ruiz recommended this place called Hugo's Cellar, a steakhouse. It's open since like the 30s.
Oh, cool.
Fucking great.
It's in Old Town?
It's in Old Town. It's in the Royal Queen or the something. The hotel across the street from the Nugget. I think something has to do with the Four Queens or some shit like that. To underground restaurant, steakhouse, old school.
Like fucking, Peter Luger kind of style?
Yeah, like that. Really old tableside salad. And it was just the best. And we walked around and like, there's if you go up Fremont Street, like outside of the quote Fremont Street experience, like one block, there's like a hipster takeover happening right now.
With the shipping container
thing,
right?
By the shipping container thing, but there's all these new restaurants and bars. It's like, fuck, this is great.
There's like a health food store I found, which is rare to find on a road trip in Nevada.
Reasonably priced.
And you can walk. There's so many things in close proximity in Old Town Vegas. Like next door to something is another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
In Main Street Vegas, the block is owned by a giant monolith of a hotel.
And you have to like wait to go across the street and then on the thing. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah. This was way better. I don't think I'm ever going to go back to quote New Vegas.
Seems like it'd be better to stay in Old Vegas.
Hell
if you
want
to go to a thing in New Vegas, take a lift and then go back.
Yeah,
that'd be more fun.
It was great, and our room was nice. It was like $49. The Nugget.
Wow,
it was great. It was great. I'm sold. And we also found this, which is the Plaza Hotel in Old Vegas, which is the exterior scene.
Oscars.
Well, first off, the restaurant's called Oscars Beef Boob and Boob and Beef Booze and Broads. But also, this is the exterior from Biff's Pleasure Palace in Back to the Future 2.
One, of course it is, because that makes sense. Two, of course you know that.
Yeah. I was like, baby. She's like, I don't care.
Yeah. She and I get along.
Yeah. I cannot recommend strongly enough Old Vegas if you haven't done it.
Yeah, and the National Park. Just go to National Park. National go for Park. A hike. Just drive through it, something.
Also, I'm doing a poster. It's coming out, I think.
That's a very good picture.
This is an iPhone. This is an iPhone Vinny Russo took. But Larry Chen shot some shots like this. That's why I was up there. 100 megapixel. And we're doing a poster to raise money for Malibu Fire Relief. It's going to be for sale on the 1552 website. I will post up when it happens. Follow me on Instagram. The snake was so fucked. But this is my first proper canyon drive in the Countach, and it was great. Car was really happy up there.
It's very good. It's, you got red car, burned trees, gray rocks, and then there's fog like in the distance.
It was you couldn't have spent money to get this kind of morning light. That's this was true. Like literally like probably 15 minutes after sunrise. It was great.
How does she handle?
Oh, it's so fun. I mean, the steering's heavy on the snake.
Yeah, it's very heavy.
Yeah, sure. But on the open sweepers, oh, it's super happy.
You got to wait. You got to get roll on the gas late, kind of Porsche style, or you know, how's the understeer as someone who's driven an, as someone who's driven an Aventador before?
Yeah, it's I didn't push the limits of the handling. Let's just say that
makes sense.
It's really happy on on Canaan Road. You know, the open sweepers road in Encinal. It's really happy. On the snake, there's a lot of handwork.
That's a really tight road.
The snake's very tight.
So, yeah.
And this is like old school manual steering. So it's...
Did you go to first gear at any point?
If I wanted to... It was one of those things where if I really wanted to be aggressive, if I was like really on it, yeah, I would probably go to first. But yeah. I kept it in second because I'm not a go to first guy.
Not many cars are go to first people. Yeah,
and they it's don't a like dog it. Leg first too. So there's also that. So, but it's... on the open sweepers, it's glorious. It was very happy. But it's so funny because the Countach, like, you want to treat it with kid gloves because it's old and Italian and expensive. Mm-hmm. And you mentally see it as something fragile. But the engine is much happier when you actually romp on it, like, hard.
Up in the RPM range.
Top of the RPMs, a lot of throttle, really getting heavy on. It doesn't like this low RPM maintenance throttle. Mm-hmm. You got to fucking romp on it, and then it gets really, really happy. So you got to remember those videos of, like, Valentino hammering on him in the 80s. Like, that's how you kind of...
It's the opposite of, like, a big old V8, you know, like big mm-hmm. displacement muscle car. Mm-hmm. They're real happy from 1800 to 45.
Yeah. This so you got to like wind the shit out of this. Yeah, yeah, totally. You got to keep it between 3 and 7,000 RPM like all the time.
I drove a lightened 190E that had all the like European engine parts and hot rod. So I basically got to have the European 190E experience, and the guy took so much weight out of it. It was like 2,600 pounds. No, 2,800
with driver. He took 2,600 pounds out of it?
No. It weighed 2,800, that car, with driver. Also, that's dog
very
leg.
Light. Does it have an interior?
It's got race seats in the front, and it was ordered without sunroof. It has manual door locks, manual windows. Oh, wow. Like, it had nothing in it.
Yeah.
But dog leg and keeping things in the rev range.
Yeah.
It loves work. It from 5 to 7. You know.
Yeah, you got to work. That car's not very fast.
This felt like, now I understand. When I drove the first one that was bone stock, I was like, okay, like this feels like a C class, and it's like the chassis is nice and it's comfortable. And then this thing, like, oh, this is a WRC quality chassis that's very rigid and turned and changed direction immediately. Like, this, I get. It felt great.
All right. I fucks with it. I can't wait to see the video. We can get to questions. Yeah, it's been about an hour. Well, we probably have at least. All right. I'm going to give you fuckers 10 to 15 minutes to get your super chat questions in, and then we'll cut them off. Thank you very much. Let's get us started. Steve says, I'm 7 feet tall and I'm sick of seeing 6'3 guys who think they're tall review cars. I'm 9 inches taller than them. Is my dream to have Corvettes, 911s, Vipers, and Mustangs unrealistic? If not, what can I do to fit? First off, I have an issue with Steve's question. I'm 6'3". And I'm in the 95th percentile of height, meaning I'm taller than 94% of the population. So just because you're in the 99.9th percentile doesn't mean that the rest of us aren't also tall.
By definition, you are tall.
Yes.
By actual statistical definition.
Also, if you're sick of if you want someone to see someone your size review cars, I suggest you pick up a camera and start reviewing cars, because 7-footers are few and fucking far between. I think I've probably seen a dozen of them out and about in my entire life, if you exclude NBA players.
John Sally, right, exactly. Yeah. He reviewed cars.
That's true. And John Sally reviewed cars.
Mm-hmm. 7-1.
Is your dream to have a sports car unrealistic? If not, what can you do? Okay.
Well, all of these come in convertible.
That's step one. All of them come in convertible. Strap on a pair of goggles.
Above the windshield.
Or you can wait until Shaq gets tired of one of his cars, because he has them stretched out. He has the extend EWB.
How do those drive? That would be
probably
so interesting.
Probably fucking terrible.
He had that 360. I remember that Ferrari 360 on Cribs.
No, remember this one? I'm going to find it because it's hilarious. The Shaq 360. Where is it? I'm surprised. How does Google not just immediately find this?
It looks like there's too many YouTubers buying Ferraris.
Oh, man. I'll just stretch. Because he stretched one. Oh, here's the Lambo. Here's a weird thing. If you're 7 feet tall, Shaq stretched a Gallardo.
Doesn't look that bad.
It doesn't look that bad, that front but window is at the huge. Same time, it looks weird as fuck.
It does look weird, but it
looks weird.
It's
and
not
he
crazy.
Also stretched a Ferrari. I don't remember. Where's the 360? I don't know.
I remember just seeing it in his garage.
Yeah, it was. He did a 360. Oh, here is this.
His was yellow, I think.
Yeah, whatever it was. Here's Shaq in a. Yeah, that's the Lambo. Yep. So you can wait till Shaq gets tired of a car.
Oh, wait. Click that. That's Shaq in 10 cars that are way too small.
So Shaq maybe it shows all his stretch. Oh, here we go. This will serve your question nicely. Here's Shaq in a smart car, in a mini Wrangler, and a go-kart. Extended. This is wrong. This says extended custom Ferrari. That's a Lamborghini, not a Ferrari. S-Class. I mean, look, you could. I have seen our friend Brian Scotto.
He's tall.
He's 6 foot five. It's not. I know it's not 7 feet, but he had the rear seat removed from his 911 and had the front seat basically put into the rear seat.
Like Hightower from Police Academy.
Yes, basically.
Which is a movie from the 80s most of you haven't seen.
Pretty much. So like, it is possible. Like, it's just money, bro. And you're going to have to spend it. You know what I mean? You can have a custom seat made and put in a custom bracket. And a Corvette is not going to happen because you're against the firewall.
A Viper won't either.
A Viper won't happen either. But a 911 or a Mustang, it would be entirely possible to have custom seat rails and custom seats installed.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. I would look at custom. There's almost nothing you're going to fit in stock.
Yeah, that's really tall.
You know, you could fit in like GT cars, like a S63 coupe, or M4, you know,
four maybe. No, it's an M3 size. Yeah, probably not.
I don't know about that.
And some cars have longer. It feels like have longer seat rails, and the telescoping wheel reaches much further than others. So I'm not sure which ones, but that would be something to look for too.
I would suggest custom. Thank you, Steve. Austin says, "Love you guys. I love you too, buddy. Been considering a later run Lexus ISF 2011 or 12 for my fiance. Thoughts on waiting for further depreciation or does low production hold values?" P.S. Justin, take me out. Oh, I don't know what that means. Okay,
Justin.
Justin's the guy who bought my Skyline.
Oh, okay.
I mean, look, that car is now kind of old. You know what I mean? ISF 11, 12 is already approaching 7 years old. I think while they will continue to depreciate, they're depreciated.
The rate of it will probably slow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of them. They didn't sell well at the end. They did not sell a lot of them in the last couple of years. They did revise the suspension at some point during the run. I forget what year it was. Maybe 11, maybe 10 or 11. So if you can get a later one, you do. The people who are into them are really into them, though. And they're very durable, and the engines are really good, and they have a habit for being really reliable. So I think they're going to – I think now that they have that initial depreciation, I think they're going to hold. I mean, I don't think they're going to go back up yet, but, like, they're not going to drop like rocks now. They've already taken that hit. So I think if you want one – get in the game.
Yeah. It's like a landing plane. Like, it's about to touch runway and then maybe it'll touch up.
Yeah. I don't know where the bottom is for these, but I don't think it's that low, honestly. I don't know what they're going for now, but like, if they're 20 to 25 for a good one now, that's where you're going to get in the game because they're not ever going to go to 12.
Well, that E55 wagon you tweeted was interesting from Bring a Trailer.
Because
someone said that the price it sold for today was $37,500. That's what they sold for.
That was
for
an 05 66,000-mile E55 wagon.
He said that's what they were selling for in 08. So three years, they depreciated hard.
Yeah.
They probably kept dropping, and then they went back up a little bit in the last few years.
Yeah, and Doug bought his, which is a 2012 with 40 something thousand miles on it for $44,000.
That makes sense. But so it's 12 years newer. Wow.
Cool. 7 years newer. So like the wagon is makes a big difference. And
it does, but I think I'm saying like the fact that car dropped from, you know, its MSRP of like 90 to 37
and
in
then stayed
2008
there.
Money and then kind of sat there, you know, or maybe dropped and went back up, like I don't know. Timeline-wise, you're probably going to... It's going to be flat
6 years, it's depreciated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's pretty much fully depreciated done. Unless you really want to find a beater.
Unless the economy craters or you want something beat, yeah.
Right. Hoyt says, hey, guys, 2.7T Passat wagon guy here. My hair was falling out, so I pulled a Farah and shaved it off. What are you shaving with? Standard razor is a no. Plug. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I use the Brio Beardscape, which I did an ad for, but they're not paying me to say this shit. I use it fucking every week because it's great. And then I have Harry's razors. And in the shower, I got my shower mirror, my fucking Barbasol OG, the thick shit. And I do a buzz in the bathroom sink. And then I go in the shower and I do the straight razor. Once a week, not a straight razor, a Harry's razor, like a, you know, regular,
let's fucking do a regular razor.
Yeah. I go through a lot of blades though. I use a new blade every time I shave my head.
I wonder how much real estate, like what the ratio is from your face to your head.
I think one head shave is equivalent to probably 3 to 4 face shaves.
That's about right.
But like my head skin is pretty sensitive and I only shave like once a week and Harry's razors are cheap. So I spend like $62 for a year worth of razors, blades. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. But, dude, having no hair is great. I wash my whole face and head with face wash, there's never anything in my eyes, and it's glorious.
You don't have to style
and
it.
And I own my baldness. I recommend it for everybody. It's like turning off comments. Shaky Byrne says, keep it up, Matt and Zach. No problem. For a 27-year-old educated in business, tech, and finance, what could be a good company car to look at for a job?
Or a good car company.
Oh, a good car company. Excuse me. Not a good company car. A good car company to look at for a job. Opening to anything to get into the industry. Well, shit. Where do you live, man?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you live in Michigan, you got your Ford, GM, your Chrysler. If you're in California, a lot of these companies have West Coast offices, you know, design studios or... I mean, look, the finance, a lot of these, you know, business, tech, and finance, a lot of these companies have in-house financing division.
You could work at a dealership doing in-house financing.
I mean, if you don't want to work at a dealership, you could work at the corporate level for the in-house, you know, Ford Credit or, you know, any of these companies have their own in-house financing divisions.
You could also, if you want to, go to try and find a startup and blend the three things you're educated in together. If you have business acumen and you know tech, like, you know, that's another way to do it.
Yeah. If you're up in Silicon Valley or in LA, you could try Tesla. I mean, they have a pretty big staff out here. You know, I would say if you're a business tech finance guy and you're not a fucking artiste or an engineer, like aim for the credit division of these companies or something a little more corporate. It's not as glamorous, but it would definitely get your foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Toon Squad says, it seems like a lot of journalists have lots to say about cars but can't drive for toffee. I won't ask you to call out the bad ones, but who are the best drivers among journos? They suggest Toon Squad suggested three very good ones. Larry Webster, Sam Smith, and Jack Baruth are all excellent drivers. Mm-hmm. Saying those guys have a lot of racing experience, and I've raced with all of them. Travis Okulski at Road and Track is a very good driver.
Chris Harris,
obviously. Dickie Meaden over in England. Is he an auto car or Evo?
I don't know.
I think he's at Evo. He's a great driver. Jethro's a great driver. Johnny's a very solid driver. Randy, obviously, is a solid driver.
Like anyone who is a pro, of course. I think Chris Chilton, he's a Road and Track, right?
Yeah, Chris Chilton. Chilton is a good driver. Yep.
Anyone who comes from the racing side is obviously going to be good.
Yeah.
And then anyone who has, like, the Baruth... And Chris, people that have like taken their job and then done a lot of racing when they can.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing education. Kamisa
is a good driver.
Oh, yeah. He's like a precision.
Yeah. Kamisa is a great driver. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a lot. I mean, you know, the ones who don't do a very good job get a bad rap. But I think a lot of them are pretty decent, especially the ones who write about performance cars. I mean, a lot of the younger guys, you know, that are just starting with YouTube channels or whatever, like, don't have a lot of experience. But, like, the guys who are in their 40s and 50s who've been around and write for major publications, not your fucking weekly newspaper,
right.
Like, write for Road and Track or Car and Driver, like, a lot of them are pretty
Kuroga is quick too, because he does Tony, a lot of their like, especially when you read like Lightning Lap or any of the magazines do their high level testing with serious performance cars, like, and they need to get those numbers down to like a good time that's respectable and honest for what the car can do. Like the people doing that driving are good.
Yeah. And if you're listening to the show and you're in our industry and you're a good driver and I didn't mention you, please don't get mad at me. I just can't remember everybody all the time. Thank you, Tune Squad. Justin says, I test drove a 2015 Hyundai Genesis 5.0 with the V8. There's a lot of them in the 25,000 or less range with much life left to give. For 90% commuting driving, they don't get enough love. Is there any reason why I shouldn't buy one? Not really. I think they're nice cars.
Yeah. I don't know what the reliability record is of those cars in that year, so I would definitely check like a Consumer Reports. I don't want to say if they're good or bad, but as a car, I remember liking it. It's comfortable. Mm-hmm. The engine was good. Like, they're a little floaty, but who cares? It's a commuter.
Yeah.
Used Hyundai's. My friend was telling me an Equus. You can get an Equus now for like $26,000.
Yeah, for pennies. This is, I think the Equus, I remember when we drove one for something, it was like the biggest, floatiest, whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, it drives bad.
This is better than that. That didn't drive well.
You wouldn't want to, ride an Equus. That's what it's for.
Yeah, no. The 2015, that's not a good picture. 2015 Genesis 5-liter. I cannot really think of a reason not to get one at $25,000.
Good enough looking car too.
Yeah, I think they have. I'm pretty sure this thing had a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty from the factory, right?
If it, I don't know, but if it does, that's fantastic.
I think it did, and I mean, don't quote me on that, dude. You know, look, do your own research there. But I think that had a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty from the factory. If not, you still got 7 years. Warranty on a $25,000 luxury car. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I cannot think of any reason why not to buy one. No, I would say go for it. Tune Squad donated to get someone else's question from the regular chat into the super chat. P. Duffy wanted to know about Morgan. So Morgan is a cat I adopted after Axel passed away. So we brought him home, and he was great in every way you can imagine. Three-legged cat, beautiful, very fun, very energetic, 2 years old, except he wanted to kill my other cats. And I did everything I could to – I had cat behaviorists. I had a security door installed in my bedroom. I had all the toys. I had all the feeding schedules and the playing, and I did everything I could do. He just wouldn't get along with my other cats. And it got to the point where I had a veterinary behaviorist come over who told me that in order to even attempt to make this happen, I would have to put all three of my cats on medication. And basically, Conrad, my other cat, lost 5 pounds in 3 months from stress. He went from 17 to 12 pounds. Now, granted, he was a little chubby before, and he's now at a healthy 13 pounds. But like,
maybe he just wanted to look good around the youth.
He was, the veterinary behaviorist was like, this cat, meaning Conrad, like lives in fear all the time of this other cat. And so we decided that we could not keep Morgan, and it would be better for everybody if we didn't. And so here's Morgan now with my future brother-in-law, and he is now best friends with their dog, Pee-Pee. And their dog, Pee-Pee, was kind of crazy. And Morgan calmed the dog down because now the dog has someone to play with.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't so, like, you're going to calm down or I'm going to fucking cut you.
Morgan went to go. We rehomed him with Hannah's brother and sister-in-law. And he immediately became like best friends with a dog, and they love him, and we're going to visit him on Sunday. But she sends us like video all the time, and they're having the best
time.
That's
awesome.
And so Morgan is really, really happy. Unfortunately not with us, which is not, you know, I wanted him to be with us. Do we have another picture of Morgan? No. But I wanted him to be with us. I did everything I could to make it work. we tried really hard, but, and I wasn't about to like return him to the shelter or anything like that, but like.
And you also didn't want all of your animals to be on lithium, like a
I was certainly not going to drug up. It was one thing if I had to put him on drugs because he was being a dick, but like, I'm not going to put Conrad and Pico on drugs just because they're afraid. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And even if the doctor said, if she thought there was a guarantee of success, The drugs would have been every day for 6 months.
That's
and
too
then
long.
And she was like, even then, I'm not confident that Morgan could be left alone with the other cats. So we'd be living in a divided house indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it was hard because I didn't want to feel like a failure. I didn't want to fail the cat, you know. I wasn't going to return, and I didn't want to like put him on the open market. Like, who wants a cat? But like, the fact that Hannah's brother and his wife like loved him so much and we're like, we'll take him.
Yeah.
I was like, and now we're going to go, we can go visit. So it's like, we get pictures and
couldn't
updates.
Have worked out better. Really
couldn't have worked out better. So Morgan's doing really well. Unfortunately, not in our house, but, the other cats are like, when Hannah brought him down to John's house, like, when she came back, like, Conrad was, like, literally, like, tap dancing. Like, he was like, I'm in the room, I'm out of the room. I'm in the room, I'm out of the room. He, like, there's the other cats are so happy now.
Right away.
The other cats are super happy.
Wow.
Now, so that's the update on Morgan. All right, back to cars. Crumbs 15 says, how would a used base model C7 Corvette be for a daily driver? Comfort isn't a huge concern, and I live in Oregon, so winter isn't either, mostly rain.
I mean, they're really nice GT cars. Like, visibility is good and space is good. It's just kind of, it's cramped if you want to bring more than one person.
I don't recommend buying a base car.
Oh,
Z51.
Yeah,
like, I don't know how base he means. If he just means not a Z06, but like, I remember that base press car we had that was a hunk of shit.
Mm-hmm.
The Z51 is the best value in motoring.
And it wasn't only like a few $1,000s.
Yeah.
It's
you got
really
like all this hardware and it was a couple of
grand.
It was like
shock springs, brakes, diff cooling, oil cooling. It was a lot.
Yeah. You got everything.
Wheels, tires. Yeah.
You got all this stuff. Like, so I would say a Corvette is a nice daily driver, especially if weather's not a concern. Tires are expensive. Just recognize that you're going to be shocked when you have to buy tires for that car because they're really expensive. Other than that, they're stout. They're reliable. The C7's a nice car, but get a Z50.
You get an E-diff with that package too.
Oh, yeah, remember? The E-diff.
Because I drove a base one.
It was a different differential.
It was like, it was a weird idea.
Yeah, no, get the Z51. But other than that, nice cars. Ken says, I'm thinking about a GT350 versus a BMW M2. I currently have a Stage 2 15 Golf R. Okay.
I haven't driven a 350.
I mean, I've driven all the 350s, the base one, the Magna Ride, and then the R. There's a big difference between the base car and the R. And I wouldn't even buy a base one. If you can get one with magnetic ride, that's a big improvement. Like the new, I don't know if he's talking about brand new or slightly used, but the engine is very, very special. The engine's fucking glorious, but it's still a Mustang. Like, it's still a big, bulky car. Like, Mustangs in general feel like you took a car that was a necessary size, and then you shoved a bike pump in it and went thunk, 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 and you ballooned out all the body panels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bigger and more bulbous than it needs to be. Whereas the M2, imagine you stuck a fucking pump in it, a 3 Series, and sucked it down.
Totally.
And sucked the bodywork over the chassis.
Absolutely.
So you know what I mean? The M2 feels like it's as small as it could be to have this 4-seater space, whereas the Mustang is like this big bulbous kind of thing.
Yeah. The Mustang does an impressive job. I've only driven like the PP2 cars, not the GT350, but you're very aware of the size, like the view out the front around you when you get in it. And like, it does a good job of handling quickly, like a little bit lighter than it is, but it still feels like a large car.
Yeah. So I think
it doesn't shrink that much when you drive it. You know what I mean?
No, it does when you drive it on a track, but like on the road, it feels like a big car always, you know, and it feels more like a bunker, everything, you know, whereas the M2 has a better greenhouse and stuff like that. So I think you got to weigh those options. It's, you know, they're both a lot of fun. They both have good balance. The M2, the engine isn't that special, but the chassis is special. Mm-hmm. The GT350, the chassis is not that special, but the engine is like glorious. You know,
M2 doesn't have mag ride, and the new ones I think are all competition spec, so like it's going to be even stiffer than the last one. Well, I mean, if you're on smooth roads in Oregon, then that might not be a problem.
No, different guy.
Mag rides would be nice.
Different guy.
Yeah, different person.
I think that's what you need to weigh. If it was my money, if it's a daily driver, I'd probably get the M2.
Why?
I like the size. Mm-hmm. I like the size. That GT350R I fell in love with because it was just over the top and crazy. But the truth is, I think I prefer, you know, I said that I wanted that car 2.5 years ago. Now, right. I think I'd be happier with a smaller car. Mm-hmm. They have the same amount of usable space. The Mustang's much bigger than the M2, but the actual usable space is the same.
I wonder if the trunk is bigger, but
marginally.
But you can put the seats down in the M2, I think.
Yeah, you can still fit shit.
That's all you need. Yeah.
So that's what I have. Volodymyr. I think that's Volodymyr.
Volodymyr
Shonia says Lotus Elise versus 2ZZ 6-speed MR2 or something else around 30 grand or less. I had and loved the S2000. I have and hate a new WRX. Mm-hmm. I like Boxsters. I haven't tried Vets, 911s, or F-Types. So $30,000. Well, he likes the Elise, which is a stripped-out, raw car. He liked the S2000, which was a lightweight car.
Pretty raw.
He hates the WRX, which is big. You know, it's a big car and not particularly fast on its own.
No, it's capable, but
he likes a Boxster. If you haven't tried a Vet, I mean, Vets feel pretty. Vets are light on their feet. They're agile. It's a Vet versus F-types are kind of heavy. Although if you want the raw horsepower, like a 2015 F-type with a V8 is a hell of a depreciated bargain. Mm-hmm. They're in the 30s or like low 40s and they're crazy fast.
I would
crazy
rather
loud.
If I was only going to keep it for a few years, I think I'd rather get a C7 with Z51 because the interior of the F-type is just really dull to me.
I think they're kind of similar actually. I think the interior, the styling of an F-type interior
I just remember the one we had was F-Type R. It was black, and I was like,
it's similar to a Z51. Like, look, okay, I'll pull this up. Hang on. It's hard for me to type because the screen is far. I mean, look.
Oh, that's funny.
They
both have the grab handle. They both have the triangular grab handle.
So here's a C7 Corvette interior. Here's an F-Type interior. These are not hugely different.
They're not.
I mean, honestly.
That's pretty funny.
They're pretty similar,
Here's
actually.
What I don't like. This is, like, go back to the F-Type. That's, like, a very nicely polished photo, right?
Yeah.
But when we drove that car to Palm Springs and back, and it was, like, the HVAC knobs, everything else, like, it had that thin piano black plastic
look
to
it. Yeah.
It did not look like it was going to age that well.
You know what I haven't seen, I've never been in a C7 that had like a ton of miles on it. Like I've never been in a rental one. Yeah. I've only ever been in press cars for the most part. So I don't know how that wears over time.
He may though, I mean, if he's considering an Elise and like an MR2, you know, interior decor may not be like high on the priority list.
I would also I'd look at Caymans. I mean, if he likes,
oh yeah,
I would look at Caymans for in the 30.
You get a Cayman S for 30s with a 6-speed,
yeah,
or 7-speed.
You can get a Cayman S for 30.
I would do that full stop.
I would get a Cayman S probably. You can get early 997s Carreras for 30, but I'd rather have a nicer Cayman than an earlier 997.
I think the Cayman S is awesome. I would do that.
I would say try a Cayman, and if you don't like it, have a look at a Vet. Tim says, best classic-ish car for beachfront cruising under 15 grand. I was thinking about an E30 convertible or a Volvo 240. E30 convertible is a good one. I would say E30 convertible.
Inexpensive. I think
underappreciated at the moment.
No one will notice, I would say, your E30 convertible other than people like us.
Yeah.
So when I think beachfront cruising, I always think hot rods or something like that, because that's just like
the general crowd will turn around and go, that's cool.
Regardless of age, they'll like it.
I think 15 grand gets you a lot of E30 convertible.
That gets like three of them.
It gets a bunch of E30 convertible. Volvo 240s, the coupes, I like them. I like a Volvo coupe on the right wheels, BBS basket weaves.
They have to be modified, though, I feel like.
Yeah.
A stock 240 coupe, it doesn't do anything for me. With the right stance, wheels, mods, like
yeah, this. Awesome.
Like no, that.
Wait,
but that's not a beach cruiser.
It's not
cruiser.
A good picture.
You know, that's now we're talking race car.
Oh, see, no. Here we're talking here. Like that? How about a Volvo 780? Nobody likes a 780, but I do. True. Do you know a 780?
Is that the sedan after the 740 wagon turbo?
No, the second gen after that. It's this. It's the second gen two door Volvo.
That is a weird looking car,
dude. By Bertone. That's a Bertone car.
That is not his best work.
You could fucking LS swap these things, and they're rad.
You can LS swap lots of things.
Yep.
Well, that should not be one of them.
Oh come on. Well, I mean,
well, it's funny. Is the back pillar kind of is E30 ish?
I mean, look, beach cruising. How do you not say a Wrangler? 80s mm-hmm. Wrangler on 80s wheels.
Hardtop, though, so it steals your shit.
15 grand. I don't know if you're getting anything where with a Grand Wagoneer, you're not getting the right one.
You get a Nomad. You get like a running, driving Nomad. I mean, dude,
15 grand in muscle cars, convertibles. Convertibles are cheap.
Yeah.
Nobody wants the convertibles. The collectors don't.
Convertible Mustang. Convertible Firebird.
Yeah. Firebird.
Convertible Firebird. No one cares about those.
No. Yeah.
That'd be
like a
cool.
Pontiac Le Mans, like not a GTO, or a Chevy Malibu,
mm-hmm.
you know, so a cruiser, or
like a Dart 64, like a 64, no,
big 64, a big caddy, like a big 60s like caddy, yeah,
that would be amazing if you don't care about stopping, crashing into things, or airbags.
I mean, beachfront cruising caddy. To me implies cool. traffic. That means that's sitting in traffic and not dynamics are not important. Just got to look cool.
An E30 would be easier to park. Or like
how about,
if it's Cabrio.
Two seats, how about an Alpha, little Alpha Spider? Like a little Alpha, you know.
How do those handles stop and go?
They're all right.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all right. They work. Alpha Spider, Maserati bi-turbo Cabriolet.
You VW cab, you could go the Camisa route.
You could, a bitch basket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a Cabrio cab or like, yeah. I think those are some options.
A lot of options.
Those are some options. Thank you, sir. Andrew Jackson says, I'm looking at a 2015 wow. and up Golf GTI, and I'm stuck between the 6-speed or the DSG. Thoughts? Do we prefer it? Rumored the stock clutch doesn't hold with a tune. I drove a 2-liter Jetta GLI that was like, well, first off, when people talk about a clutch holding, that is the driver, not the tune. Because I could drive a 700 horsepower car on a stock clutch and not blow the clutch.
Unless if the clutch is too weak to hold, like if it slips though. Like there are clutches that are too weak to hold that level of power.
There are. But
like a stage 2 tune probably won't do it.
If you're talking about not an all-wheel drive Golf R, right? A 2-wheel drive Golf. Mm-hmm. If you're putting a bunch of power through that, you'll get wheel spin before you blow the clutch in a car like that, unless you're launching it.
Mm-hmm.
And what the fuck are you doing launching it?
If you were on like a V, you know, like a prepped drag strip where all you do is hook up, then you might slip your clutch. I don't know. But I think if it was stage 2 and it's fast, like you'd be fine.
I think if you're talking about bolt-ons, I think there's not really a concern with a 2015 and up clutch. I mean, look, granted, I don't read the fucking VW Vortex forum, so I don't know. And if there's a 30-page thread about people blowing clutches, like I haven't heard about it. So you're going to have to do your own research there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that nerdy. But I've interacted with Volkswagen guys. I've driven their cars, 300 to 400 horsepower in a 2-liter car with both a 6-speed and a DSG, and none of them have mentioned any problems blowing clutches. Look, Volkswagen DSG is good.
Yeah.
It's a good system.
Great one.
The 6-speed, the clutch is super light. The shifter's super light. That's one of my criticisms of the Volkswagen manual gearboxes. They're too light, and they don't have enough feel for mm-hmm. me. So I would say probably get a DSG, but that's just my taste. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like
I found the DSGs are still very fun. Like I drove a Golf R and
I would get a Golf R and DSG.
Yeah,
for sure.
If you live in a place where there's traffic, like we do, any city, I think the DSG is fun enough and responsive enough that when you want to shift in a canyon or a track, like you're still doing some work and you can go, yay, race car. Like it's definitely not as interactive as a manual transmission, but it's a really good compromise.
Totally. Skibum 291s. How many? Oh, we got Shaka a bunch. Bruh. All right, I'm cutting them off. I'm cutting them off right now because I have to be out of here at 6 o'clock because I got a dinner fucking res. Ooh. Night market tonight, dude. Mm-mm.
I need to go there.
Recommendation to other users. Oh, go watch Lee Keen's In Car from Sebring.
Yep. And Rain Zach, Dance from Nürburgring.
Yeah, and Zach killed it with the M2 competition review. Thank you. Yes, he did. Ed Estrella says, what would be a good enthusiast car for a college student? My budget is $20,000 to $25,000 and live in Salt Lake City, new or used.
Well, it snows.
Yeah.
Get a used nicely. I mean, I'm always biased to Subaru, but that actually you have way more money than that. What am I saying?
I mean, an Evo, a great Evo.
You can get a really good Evo and probably save some money. What are those in the teens yet? Like STIs are in the teens.
Enthusiast car for a college. Yeah. In Salt Lake City.
I bet there's a lot of STIs and Evos around because you're in a snow place. So you could definitely do that.
I don't know.
S3s are too expensive still. How much is a Golf R? No, Golf R is used too expensive too.
I would say get an IS350 and put snow tires on it.
That's a great, be so much fun.
Or
that'd be so fun.
I would say get a W124 Mercedes wagon and save the rest of the money on maintenance.
You could do, if you get good snow tires, you don't have to only stay in the all-wheel drive camp. You could do a lot
of stuff.
That's
true. Yeah. You
could
get I don't think you need all-wheel drive. I think snow tires. $20,000 to $25,000 gets you, the problem is that gets you a lot of fucking cars. Like, good budget for, what do you like to do?
You 335 XI for that money.
That's true. 335.
That's a very nice
car. You get an E60 BMW 535i wagon touring for that kind of money. And possibly an extended warranty.
Yeah, or just have or save $5,000 to fix stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't want to fix stuff, I mean, yeah, WRX or Evo.
Mm-hmm. For sure. John O. Twist says, soccer ball. Thank you. Gender reveal parties are dumb. Yep, thank you. Nathan says, Zach, the one takes have improved since you began. That's what happens when you practice things.
You do it all the time.
Go watch my early videos. They ain't not good. they're not. Excellent work. You cannot imagine how hard it is getting used to camera. Yep. Thunder Clutch says, speculation on how someone might be able to import 3 Zondas in California and drive them around. Well, I'm guessing there's a couple ways. I don't know if this person is trying to do that and wants advice or if he's seen 3 Zondas driving around. There's a couple ways. One is Montana. 2 is Florida. Those are the ways I'm thinking of, because you could get those cars into either of those states without any problem at all and drive them around.
The third is that show and shine display law.
It
right?
might be possible to get a Zonda in with show and display. Maybe.
And then if you do that, your miles are limited to 2,000 a year.
I think it's less. Like yeah, really? Maybe wow. less. But it might be possible to get one legally in show and display. The other option is if they have an out of country residence, if they live in wherever the fuck, if you have 3 Zondas, money is not an issue. So what you would do is you would ship them in to California for a year on their foreign registrations on a carné, which is basically a carné is a tourist visa for something not human.
Right.
People do it with camera equipment. They do it with – and you could do it with cars. That's also how you would – drive an R34 Skyline in America. You'd have it registered in Canada, get a carnet for it, and you could drive it in America on its Canadian registration for a year, and then at the end of the year, it has to go back for one day. You re-up the carnet, and you bring it back. And so if you have 3 Zondas, you could fly them here on a carnet for a year and then send them back for a day, re-up the carnet, and then bring them back again. That's a speculation.
That's very good info.
And it's entirely possible that if they've got the car in California, even if it's foreign registered, they might remove the foreign plate and put on just one of those nothing plates.
That's all.
Put on a blank plate. So those are your 3 options: Montana, Florida, or foreign reg in carne are my 3 guesses. Kwabi Wasabi loves the podcast. Thank you, sir. Miguel says, I think you both collected. Thank you. How do you guys, he'd been wondering on a serious note, how do you guys treat negative criticism regarding Zach's one takes? I say you're both great. I don't read the comments. I just stopped.
I read them, and when they're just I hate this guy, fuck this guy, I usually respond you don't hate me as much as I do. it kind of diffuses the situation. It's true. And but if someone has general criticism, like you were very good about this when you did it, it's a statement about the car or the question. I got info wrong. Like I drove the Wrangler and didn't go to four low when I should have.
Yeah.
And I was asking people in the comments, like, I'm new to off-roading. Please tell me how to be better at this. So then you just address it, you know, like just don't let it get to you. Easier said than done, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a difference between correcting a mistake. I've made many mistakes and people have called them out correctly and people just are being dicks. And if they're a dick, like, they're not doing it. You know what I mean? It's someone, let them fucking try it. Mm-hmm. Try to make one video. Like, if you can make one video and it's watchable, you know what I mean?
And I've learned that there are plenty of people you won't make happy. I've seen comments saying the videos are too short. I've seen them saying they're too long.
Yeah.
Let the owner talk.
You see those next to each other sometimes.
Oh, my God. They should be friends. They should get together and just talk to each other. So it's like you see that and you go, all right, just do what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Make the content that you like. If there's constructive criticism, I'll read it and try to apply it. And that's it.
Yeah. There's people I get criticized for, quote, interrupting sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like I know how long I want the video to be. I know what I want to cover. I know how much time is left. Like all of these things, like I'm thinking about, and I'm the executive producer. Like, so I get to decide what content is going to the show. Like just because one guy wanted to hear where whatever fucking tangent that guest was going down doesn't mean I want the show to go down that way. Like, right. So you know, you're not gonna make everybody happy. I feel great turning off my Instagram comments. It really is the greatest thing I've ever done. And I don't read the comments on YouTube anymore. I just stopped. Mm-hmm. I managed turning them off on Instagram allowed me made me feel better about not reading them on YouTube anymore. I think Zach does a good job. I've watched his videos and I think he's doing a really good job. And I say over and over and over, when the audience realizes how much smarter than me he is, I'm in trouble.
Not at all.
But you know, it's any people don't like
you
fucking,
just listed the engine changes of a Countach and I nodded like I've never been.
Well, I'm a nerdy, you know.
That's true.
But people don't like anything different. They go, I came here for this, and if you don't do this, I just talked last episode with Richard Porter about this. Anytime they tried to do something new on the Grand Tour, people were like, no, but I came here for that other thing you guys do, and I was guilty of it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and people, they want you to keep doing the thing that they came here for. If a band puts out an album that doesn't sound just like the album they put out before.
But then, you know, everyone has a different definition of how long a band or a show should do the same thing before they go, well, they don't do anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also very hard.
Totally. Yeah. So stay. Go. I don't give a fuck.
My favorite is the comment they go, where's Matt? Why is this guy doing this? I'm like, he put up a video yesterday.
Yeah. Like, I literally, I was here on Tuesday.
You have, like, four videos going up in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so. I got videos. I had a slow December, but I got a busy January. Mm-hmm. Dimitri says, Matt, I go to Drexel. What the hell is there to do in Philly? Bro, everything. Philly's great. First off, you can buy nitrous oxide legally in Philly.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you can get tanks. South Philly Propane, it's still open. You can get actual tanks there. That's where I used to get tanks. We would have tank Sundays.
It's illegal.
That's
in how the UK.
That's why that's I'm amazing. So smart. Because we used to huff a lot of fucking nitrous. What is there to do in Philly? That's actually true, but not real consumer advice. Eat. There's a lot of amazing food in Philadelphia. I recommend going to Reading Terminal, getting the authentic Italian fucking and Amish deliciousness down there. There's great music in Philly, the Electric Factory. And what's the place on fucking South Street called? I can't remember anymore because it's been too long. So much good music in Philadelphia. Fucking some great sporting events in Philadelphia. There's good comedy in Philly. Dude, there's a bunch. Explore. Philly's a great town. Just walk east till you hit the fucking river and you'll find things. What else?
What's the Chinese restaurant that we went to? The
Han Dynasty, homie Han Dynasty. Yeah. And my friend is rebuilding his restaurant. They're going to be open again in a couple months. It burned down, called The Little Lion. Check that place out.
Good date spot. I assume you're in college. So
yeah, well he goes to Drexel.
Yeah, save up for that.
And go to in West Philly, on Penn's campus, the Greek Lady. Great Greek food. Strongly recommend it. Say what's up to my homie Dimitri.
Skip the cheese with sandwich. Come at me. I don't give a fuck.
No, get a steak whiz with, bro. Also, the Pretzel Factory. You know them soft pretzels they got in Philly? The factory is open at 4 a.m. And you get a rack of one of those pretzels, 50 pretzels. go with your friends and you're fucked up and get them right out of that oven. They roll like off a conveyor belt, dude. They'll just hand you a whole rack.
Yep.
It's fire.
Do that.
Bring your own mustard. I don't remember exactly where it is, but I think it's just called.
Oh my God. We'll make that part of a road trip at some point.
Yeah. Pretzel. Where's the factory? I bet Philly Pretzel Factory. Is this it? Oh, no, that's not it. That's someone has. It seems someone has appropriated the name.
The best business I ever saw was in line at the American Beer Festival in Denver. Someone was selling pretzel necklaces. Do you know how low the overhead is on that? String and like a 50-gallon drum of pretzels, and then you're just selling to people for like $10.
Well, oh my God, it's been a long time, and it seems that there's an actual someone has come up with a brand name. Pretzel Factory. It may require a little bit of research.
You got to find the place where they make pretzels that they give to those franchises.
It's down here. This is the original.
There's no way those places all bake their own pretzels.
Shit. Well, Google it. Find it, but get some fucking pretzels. That's what I say. But the food in Philly is where it's at. Go to every Steven Starr restaurant. Nick says, I live in Long Island. I'm looking for a new car. I daily a 2018 340i xDrive. I work at a BMW dealer. I'm looking for a truck for these shitty roads. I was thinking a new Tacoma or a Grand Cherokee. Well, Zach has a Grand Cherokee press car.
I do. It got dropped off today. He'll be reviewing
it next week. Yeah. Right? Is it a 6?
Yeah.
It's a 6? All right. Grand Cherokees are nice.
Really nice. I like the way they look. Nice. I like the right size. The Tacoma I want to drive... because I've heard from people that the seating position is weird. It's like
it's
a very flat
truck.
Floor.
Yeah, it's a really... Your feet go way out.
They go way out, like a car.
Like on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that's strange.
I've heard pretty good things about the Colorado ZR2.
Yeah, get that. Save money instead of buying the Denali. Or the ZR2 is cool.
I mean, a Tacoma is a pickup and a Grand Cherokee is an SUV. Like, do you need a pickup? Because, like, don't buy a fucking pickup if you don't need a pickup. Because pickups ride like shit.
I think the Grand Cherokee is good enough all the way up until you're starting to shop for Range Rovers. The X5 I like. I think it drives better, but you know it's more expensive.
Yeah,
I would look at that.
Yeah, man. Or
the GLC or Macan. Oh,
I mean I'm a Macan. Yeah, Macan
go
is
for
great.
Regular Macan.
I mean, if the problem is just shitty Long Island roads, but you don't need a fucking truck. You know what I mean? Like, just get a crossover, like
right.
Any crossover, really. But Macan, Long Island has some windy roads, too, so you want one that handles a little bit. I say Macan. Best handling crossover.
And don't get giant wheels because the roads are bad.
But if you work at a BMW dealer, like, maybe you just want to get a friend price on an X3, honestly.
It's true.
X3s are nice.
I haven't driven one in a long time.
They are. They're nice. You don't want the X1. That's the shit one. The X3s are nice. X5s are getting bigger, but the 3 is like where the 5 was a couple of years
ago. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Get one of those. Tom says, come to Philly. We like Philly. I love Philly. But if I come there, I ain't fucking working. Philly has nowhere to drive.
I've had people hit me up from Philly, and it's like I have a list of East Coast, but I got to wait till spring or
Dude, Philly's summer. Got nowhere to drive.
Really?
Philly has everywhere to eat and shitty-ass roads. You have to go like 25 miles outside of the city to find a decent road.
Okay. Well, they I'll meet them there.
Also, no direct flights from LA. It's annoying. Justin says, I'm looking for a daily driver I can have fun with. $20,000 budget. Considering a 2014-16 Mustang JT. Yep. Do the Maximum Motorsports thing.
Yep.
Like you find in our drive tuner car shootout.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's nothing new under the sun at this price point. I feel like every episode we have to answer questions like this.
We do.
But like it's the same shit, dude. There's nothing new in this price point. You're talking about a Mustang, a Camaro, an old vet, a 3 Series BMW, a 1 Series BMW.
An E92 M3.
Not for 20.
Really?
Not a good one.
Oh, that's true.
You know, the Evos and WRXs. You know,
FRS if you don't like power.
There's honestly...
Get it.
With a basic question like this, like, what is your definition of fun? Is your fun... I mean, if he's saying Mustang GT, then I'll just list everything that's comparable to a Mustang GT.
Which
is a Camaro, but also in some ways a 3 Series BMW, also a G37, or
I think the Mustang is the best overall package for like a sports GT thing out there right now, new or used, and it'll last longer than the 3 Series. It's less expensive to own. Sounds good. Do that.
All right. Enthusiast choice for a 3-row vehicle, Dodge Durango SRT.
Wow, I didn't think there was an answer, but you're correct.
Yeah, Dodge Durango SRT, big 6.4 Hemi. fucking meaty. The Durango's nice, actually. Mm-hmm. People don't talk about it, but that's my choice.
Remember when we ran in the canyons years ago? We're like, why is this handling well?
Or XC90 or Toyota Land Cruiser.
Different kind of enthusiasm, but
Different enthusiasm, but yeah. If you want sports enthusiasm, Durango SRT.
It's good looking.
Off-road
too.
Enthusiasm, Land Cruiser. Or luxury enthusiasm, XC90. Mm-hmm. That's my picks. Okay. Matty G. Zach, what's your dream car?
Unicorn.
Fair. Gilad says, thanks for the awesome content. I have a dilemma. I have a 996 C4 Porsche that is super sportive. Selling it and thinking of a 996 Turbo or a 997, it says S2, but I think that means Carrera 2. I'm more interested in driving experience than just power. Oh. I mean, the answer to this question is obviously go drive them both. There is no shortage of either of these cars. And if you are in the market and drive up to anyone who's selling one of these in your Porsche, they will allow you to drive their Porsche.
Great point.
I mean, especially if it's a dealer. You can go to CarMax and drive either of these fucking cars. So if it depends on experience. What does that mean to you? I prefer the way a 997 drives to a 996. I think 996s drive a little weird. They drive unlike other Porsches. That's just me. Mm-hmm. But people fucking love them. Larry Chen has a dope 996 turbo that
he
loves.
Does.
Other people have great 996 turbos that they love very much. And these are people that are just as much of a driver as I am. So, like, it's just like, what does it mean to you?
Right.
You know what I
mean?
What
is your definition of experience?
Yeah.
Is it steering feel? Is it suspension tuning? Is it stiffness? Da, 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 da,
but my answer is this: is you gotta go drive it. You just have to go drive it.
And you can turo it probably for both of those.
Probably turo either of those cars. Yeah. But if not, you can. There's enough of those cars that you could just show up at a dealer that would have, you know, one of them secondhand luxury car dealers.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not both at the same place, but like you could show up and drive those cars. And in fact, it would be expected.
How dissimilar would the 996 turbo drive compared to the C4 he's got? Like, is it just that feel with more power?
It would be exactly the same, but with a lot more power.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's your sound.
Yeah. I mean, if you want something, that's the other thing. Do you want an experience that is the same as what you've got, but with more power?
Right.
Or a new experience? That's the question you got to ask. Connor says, I have an 04 Lexus IS300. Mods to make it more fun, but still daily it.
Okay, I went way down this rabbit hole before I bought my M3. So the answer is, if you want more power, there's not much out there without going forced induction. So you could do, I mean, you can do cams if you want to get crazy and pull the whole engine apart. But really, the engine only responds to boost well. I think you can do handling mods, and that's what I would do. That car to me, unless you're holding a turbo on.
Coilovers, wheels, and tires?
Dude, yeah, coilovers, sway bars, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And lightweight wheels and tires. JDM says, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you. Crumbs says, when will C7 Corvette values bottom out? Never. There is no bottom. I'm not even kidding. Corvettes just go down and down and down and down and down and down until they're worthless.
Unless it's a special edition that kind of
unless it's a late stopped. 60s car. Something from the Chrome era. I mean,
Do you think the C5 Z06 like kind of flattened and then rose slightly? Do you think eventually a C7 Z06 will? I think they had too many. They had so many problems with cooling that it's like.
I think
people might
C7s will depreciate until they're fucking 10 grand. They will, because the best Corvette is always the newest, fastest Corvette. Period. Unless you're talking about a 67 tri-power. Or something like that.
We should end every podcast saying that together, like
and
like
remember, an AA kids, meeting. Like the best Corvette is always the newest.
It works
fastest.
If you work it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's no bottom. They will, as time goes on, they will just keep getting cheaper. That is it. Nick says, thoughts on V6 MR2s. I may trade my Gen 1 Insight for a second gen MR2 shell, very high quality kit, and put the V6. I did a video on a V6 swapped MR2. It had a RAV4 V6 in it, actually, which is similar to the Camry V6.
Okay. I've never driven
it. It was
one.
A white car. It was nice. I mean, it drove like a budget Evora, basically, you know? Yeah, I mean, there's a 15-minute video, you know, of me driving it. Go check it out. You can hear how it sounds. It seemed the reliability was fine. The engine was stock. The swap was a known quantity.
Those are all good things for a project car.
Yeah, I mean that
genuinely.
No, it had been done. Like, it had been done. I would also look at the 2-liter Toyota Caldina engine from Japan, which is also a direct swap into the MR2. I've driven multiple of those. And if I was doing it, if it was my car, a really nicely sorted 2-liter Caldina motor, assuming you can make that legal for where you live, was dope. Really nice. Because it had a V6 in an MR2 gives you sort of that budget supercar-y kind of feel, right? But the turbo motor emphasized its JDM-ness a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Different experience.
That was fun. But I have videos of me driving probably, I think, 3 or 4 different second-gen MR2s. The white one had a V6. Then there was like a blue and a gray that both had the 2-liter. And there's you can see in the videos. I just gave you an hour of video content to check out. Rashad says, 3 or 4 unique enthusiast cars under the same brand. Is Porsche a cop out?
I was gonna say BMW 1M, M2, M3, and
Anything with an M.
Yeah, anything with an M.
I mean, I don't know if he means concurrently, but like, I don't know of any brand that makes
Ford. I would say that when the Fiesta was felt different than the Focus RS, which felt different than the Mustang, which felt different than the Raptor.
There you go.
And Ford GT,
There you go. Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Multiple unique enthusiast cars under the same brand. Thank you, Quinn. Adam says, 2017 Volvo V60 Cross Country. -1 wheels. Sorry, I didn't understand what that meant. Yeah, should he get one of these new Volvo V60 Cross Countries, or a 2-year-old one anyway, add KO2s and rally lights, and have a good discount safari wagon?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do it. You could do that with a Subaru Outback as well.
You sure?
Or an Audi Allroad. I saw an Audi Allroad with the fucking Integrales on it. Looked hot.
That probably looked amazing.
It looked really, really good. I was about that. But yeah, I mean, the new Volvos are dope.
Well, that's 2016 V6.
He said 17. Is that the 17. New one?
No, I think that's the same one. Hannah had. I mean, she didn't have. I know she didn't have a Cross Country, but
I don't know. Let me see if it's the same one. It is not the new one.
Mm-mm.
Is it? Does someone have a? Does someone have a lifted one on wheels? Do you see one in this? Any images here?
No, but they just, you know, it's a wagon with a little more ground clearance.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it'd be red.
Check your warranty. Just my fiance has a 2015 V60R. Check your warranty.
Make sure it's still in existence.
Make sure you still have a warranty. That's all I'm saying. The new V60 looks rad, but it's expensive. Mean Green 42 says, I just bought a cheap 84 Rolls Royce. Good for you. I'm toying with the idea of a Mad Max blower out of the hood and 32-inch mudders.
Yes.
I like it. But what I really like is this. And this should be your goal, sir. This is the original Rolls-Royce rally car, and this should be your goal. This is provenance. This is heritage. You make it look like that.
Wow, listen,
and we can be friends. Yeah, that's the real one. They only made one of those.
That's amazing.
But I strongly recommend. Oh, here we go. This is some Dakar shit.
Yeah, that's
Paris to Dakar. This has got beastie, like maybe 31s or 32s. It's got looks like a homemade bash bar in the front of it.
Definitely homemade. Very, very Mongol. Was it Mongol Rally?
Mongol Rally, right. Yeah. I would definitely fuck with that. And I don't know about the Mad Max blower. I don't know how that would work with the engine. But
I don't know if the engine will work at all.
Or if the engine will work at all for that matter. That's a good point, Zach Clapman. But I support your decision, and good luck. Ryan says, debating. Oh, we just talked on this.
Different person, but
By this point in the show, we're just going to assume you heard us talk about it before. Douglas Asbury says, I have a Challenger Scat Pack 6-speed and been thinking of doing grid life. Is my car going to be competitive with suspension mods, or should I get rid of it and get something else? Okay. Now, by competitive.
Define competitive.
Yeah. So grid life is a great event. I recommend going. You can show up and take any car you want on the track in HPDE. You can show up and take pretty much any car you want and race it in the time attack. Now there's a class for everybody. So there's class A, B, C, D, E. and they don't choose that class based on what your car. So it's not like Challenger Scat Pack means class B. They time you during practice sessions, and then they grid you based on your lap times. So if you run X between, I'm just making these numbers up, between a 154 and a 159, that makes you class C or whatever. So any car you bring is competitive. So you should bring, you should enter any car, and they will find a class for you. So that's, I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like your car, you know, if you're saying, or should I get rid of it and get something else? Like, no. If you like your car and you like driving your car, show up to Grid Life, enter the time attack, pre-register, and they'll find somewhere for you to be.
I mean, yeah, you're competing with yourself. I mean, you'll be in a group and you might want to catch that guy or pass that person. But ultimately, like, you're time attacking, you're looking at your lap time. Don't change the car you own just for an event you may or may not have been to. Like, if you go and you go, oh, you know what, I actually want something lighter with less power or whatever, all right, then you can make the decision there. But
Grid Life is like, it's a lot of Hondas. It's a lot of, there's older BMWs. There's a variety of Mustangs. There's 350Zs. There's a variety of cars. They'll find somewhere for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can, and I'm pretty sure I've seen some Mopar at Grid Life before. In fact, I'm certain I have. I saw a Hellcat at Road Atlanta last year. I've seen Mopar. Like, yeah, just come out.
Yeah.
Come out. If you don't like your car, get a new car, but don't. You don't get a new car just because you think you need to do this.
Yeah.
Five left, and then we're out of here. Chandler Ross says, do manufacturers send journalists doctored press cars? You've mentioned before that some Ferrari press cars feel faster than regular customer cars. I don't know. I don't think so in most cases. I have heard stories that certain manufacturers will send out cars that are not exactly representative of what customers get. I have heard it about Ferrari in the past. I have no evidence of it. I don't know. Honestly, it would be, with these turbo cars now, it would be entirely possible to put a slightly more aggressive tune on a press car.
Yeah, it'd be easy.
I don't put them on a dyno compared to, I don't know.
And we also know that some companies have sandbag, like Edmunds was given an RS7 or something once, and it put down the power at the wheels. They dynoed it that it was supposed to have at the crank. So like,
well, but Audi,
that could be all the cars.
But Audi does horsepower in worst case scenarios. So Audi's power claims are guaranteed, meaning the worst weather conditions on the top of a very tall mountain, and it will make that power.
Right.
So if you dyno it in California on a perfect day, you're going to get a number that's much higher.
It's like Hellcat power.
Yeah, you're going to get a number that's much higher. And so I do know that in some cases, companies will pull cars off the line that are destined to be press cars and have them gone over so that the paint quality is perfect. The body panel gaps are perfect. You know, they warm over the cars a bit, whereas other cars that are just come off the normal assembly line don't get that level of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a horsepower thing. It's the panel gaps could be a little better. The paint quality, not that they would paint it specifically for press cars, but they choose the best ones to go in the press fleet. And then at the fleet management companies, they service them. You know, I'm driving a Veloster N right now. That has 2,000 miles on it and has literally brand new tires. Like the tires, it's still got a little bit of grease on the wheel.
Wow.
From them. Someone put 2,000 miles on a set of tires, and before this car came to me, it got brand new tires with 2,000 miles on it. So like, you know, it's been warmed over a little bit in terms of they're putting their best foot forward. Chris Harris wrote that article that back in the day, like Ferrari was putting Challenge engines in their press cars.
Right.
And like, that's pretty known at this point, but like, do they do that today? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. And I know there are, you know, when a magazine does a competition of specific cars, some companies will send several engineers to, quote, make sure the cars run. Right. Now, that doesn't mean they're making the car a cheater car, but they might look at the track you're at and change the camber or change this or change that. And they want to make sure the brakes are good and that the fluids change, and other companies might just send the car. So
Like when Dodge sent the Viper ACR to the track, you know, that car came with minders, you know, and they were checking tire pressures and they were looking at alignment settings and stuff and asking questions, you know, in between the track sessions. And other car companies will just drop the car off at your house and say, see you in a week. Have fun, you know. Right. So it's different. And but I can't verify that cars are juiced, but I do know that in some cases cars are a little warmed over. Alan says, Zach, any idea when the next season of Driva is going to be on Amazon or
it's
iTunes?
Up to sadly, they don't tell us it's up to NBC Sports. So, you know, if you follow me on Instagram or something, I'll announce it when it happens, but I won't know until it happens.
All right, three left. Adrian says, daily rear-wheel drive manual transmission car under $10,000. I mean,
please help me justify trying to get a first-gen RX-7.
You can, like, but it's going to be slow and unreliable and loud. Yeah. E30 is a good one. E30
non-M is a great one.
Yep, a 325i.
That's a great one. Sedan is a great one. And even the 325, you know, they're still really fun to drive. They lean more than like the RX-7 might or a Miata. Once they set in a corner, they feel good. The steering feedback is better than like an E36.
Yep. Vinny Russo, who I said has just moved here, is looking for a daily beater. And he's looking at 2000 Civic SIs. Which are under $10,000 right now.
That's a great car.
And they're
car.
Lovely. They're great. Even a 2002 SI, which is the hatchback with the shifter on the dash. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty fun.
Those are very good. You want rear-wheel drive, but those are good cars.
Oh, rear-wheel drive. Sorry.
Miata is always a
Miata,
good one.
Mustang, fucking old Camaros, you know.
You find a Mustang with some maximum parts on it. Old Camaros are not,
boy,
not expensive.
That was my girlfriend calling me. I'll call her back in 2
Fiance,
minutes.
Matthew.
Fiance, right. Two questions, then we're out of here. Kiwi Bot, what is your favorite wagon available in the U.S. and why? E63S.
Yeah.
Because it's fast as fuck and loud and angry, and it feels like a race car.
A drift button.
It has a drift button.
Yep. Done.
James, last question before we wrap this up. Cheapest way to achieve 5 pounds per horsepower ratio? What is that ratio? I mean, I know what that means, but like...
That's really great. That's like, impressive, I think.
It's like really fast,
that's
right?
That's like LS swap, Miata, you know.
Yeah, the cheapest. I mean, how shitty do you want it to be? You know what I mean? Buy a fucking Miata and put an LS in it. Or
strip the interior of a Vette.
Take
C5.
Take a Corvette and remove the entire bodywork, you know. Drive a go-kart.
The cheapest way, I mean, you could buy a fucked up Miata, an NA. Then you could buy the kit from Fly Miata to swap an LS in it. And do that and take out the, you know, little bit of like seat and door card it has, I guess.
Yeah, stick an LS into something really light, a big fucking, you know, you can get a 6 liter Escalade engine and put a supercharger on it and put it in a fucking 240 with no interior if you want. You know what I mean?
You sure can.
I don't know the math of bottom of the barrel. Cheap horsepower. I just don't.
It's just light plus engine.
Yeah, my guess would be an LS Exocet, because Exocets are pretty fucking cheap, and LSs make a lot of power. Like that's my obvious one.
Yeah,
I think
that's probably the move.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that ratio is. I'm sorry. That's the best I got. All right, I got to go because I got a dinner reservation, but that's our show. Thank you guys very much for watching and joining us live. I appreciate it. Zach Clapman has more One Takes coming up. If you want to do a One Take with Zach Clapman, thesmokingtire@gmail.com is the address for you. We've got new shirts coming out soon in our Blip Shift store. Thank them for hooking it up. We're going to have that poster to raise money for fire relief that I did with Larry Chen and 1552 Wheels. It's going to be real cool with the Countach. It's going to be something all you guys are going to be really proud to hang on your walls. I hope. And all the money, 100% of the profit, is going to the I don't know if it's California Fire Foundation. It's local in Malibu fire relief, but all the money's going there. Matt Crook is handling that part of it at 1552. Cool. I just made our donation to California Fire Foundation today.
Oh, by sweet.
The way. Yeah, so
awesome.
All of our Blip shirt, the shirt I'm wearing, all the money from this, 100% of it went to California Fire Foundation. So thank you to everybody who bought a shirt. And that's the thing. That's the show. I got to go. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It is easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Good day.
Goodbye.